Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. Wendy, as we mentioned during the crosstalk with Steve, will not be in today. All plans are for her to return tomorrow. She had a very successful knee surgery late last week and is still suffering some of the effects of it, but will be back, we believe, tomorrow. So thanks, everybody, for sending all the kind words over the last couple of days. She is, like I said, scheduled for this time tomorrow. Dave Ennett has stopped by or stayed by to talk a little bit about the Cubs over the weekend. Here. You were already here, yeah, so it really wasn't that big of an effort, Dave, now that we think about it. All right, a couple things. Thing number one, I know that you don't want to be down 3-1 or 3-2, but the mere fact that they are bringing the series back to Cleveland is more than a ray of hope. We've got two amazing starting pitchers going tomorrow night and Wednesday night. And if everything works out the way it should work out, we're not in bad shape, are we?
No, not at all, Bill. And I think one of the interesting notes on that is that you have two guys going who are well rested. You have Jake Arrieta, who won the game in game two in Cleveland and pitched very well in that game. And then you have Kyle Hendricks coming back potentially for game seven. And I saw a stat, I mentioned this a couple times this morning. When you have, because Cleveland's going with two pitchers who will be on 3 days rest.
Right.
Now, Corey Kluber managed pretty well when he pitched the other night on 3 days rest. But
much more hittable than his first outing in game
one.
He
was not as dominating.
Right.
Not quite as dominating as he was the first time. So when you have a pitcher going on 3 days rest versus a pitcher who is well rested.
Mm-hmm.
This has happened a number of times in the wild card era of postseason play, which dates back now to 1995. And the team with the rested starter,
yeah,
as the Cubs will be, those teams are 37-18 in those games against a pitcher on 3 days rest.
I like that.
That's pretty overwhelming.
Yeah.
So clearly it's not going to be easy.
Yeah.
And you're going on the road. But here's the other thing that kind of turns back in the Cubs' favor, odd as this is, because they're a National League team, but they get the DH back in play, which means they get Kyle Schwarber back in their lineup.
3 or 4 at-bats per game for Kyle Schwarber, mm-hmm, that makes a big difference because he's a home run threat every time he comes to the plate.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you look at it from that standpoint,
yeah,
that you have to feel, even though history tells us it's only happened 5 times or 6 times, Cubs are trying to become the 6th. It hasn't happened since 1985, but teams have done it. And
yeah,
and it doesn't seem like these days we have all these things. Well, you know, a team down by this, the odds are against them, whatever. Well, we saw the Blackhawks come back from 3-1 down on the way to a Stanley Cup in 2013 against the Detroit Red Wings.
Yep.
And we saw the Cleveland Cavaliers down 3-1 in the NBA Finals last year and come back to win. So it does happen. It is possible.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be in that situation, I think you'd like to be in the Cubs' position now with Arrieta going tomorrow and then being able to turn to Hendricks.
No question. No question. Let's go to inning one of last night's game. A ball is hit down the right field line in foul territory. Mm-hmm. And as Hayward is going for it, neither member of the Cleveland Indians there in the bullpen makes any effort at all to get out of the way. Should that have been called interference? Can you do that? That doesn't seem fair.
I'm not sure. It didn't seem fair, did it?
No.
And I guess, you know, it's one of those things where it's probably local ground rules take effect. I'm not sure exactly what happens. Fortunately, it won't be an issue once they open the new bullpens.
Right.
It won't be on the field anymore.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that you hate to see the opportunity for an out get lost.
But,
yeah,
you know, Madden didn't even come out of the dugout.
He
didn't seem to be much of a beef, but I sure thought so too, Dave.
I'm watching at home thinking that's as clear an interference call as I've ever seen, and there wasn't any.
Well, I mean, you know, if one of those guys steps up and tries to body block,
then you have a case.
Hayward, then I think you have more of a case.
Right.
I think it's clear, though, that the Cubs played much better defense last night, and they made 2 or 3 or even 4 really, I don't know if you call them spectacular, but certainly eye-opening plays. I mean, the Rizzo's play catching the ball that popped out of David Ross's mitt, the foul ball. Hayward going up, holding on to the railing as he climbed up on the wall, and then the ball started to fade back into fair territory, and he reached up and grabbed it.
Yeah.
He had Zobrist coming in and having to worry about the mound in the Cubs bullpen, making a catch on a fly ball. And then, as Kevin pointed out this morning, on that play that when Chapman failed to get over and cover the bag on that ball hit to Rizzo, Rizzo made an unbelievable stop.
It really was.
It kind of got lost because the base runner was safe. But still, I mean, things like that, those are the kinds of plays. And obviously Saturday night was a rough night defensively.
Sure.
But they were much more sound last night in pretty much every aspect.
Yeah. Let's talk about David Ross for just a little bit. As everybody knows, his career is coming to an end, either Tuesday night or Wednesday night. That'll be it. But I can't remember a guy who's had so much impact. I mean, he's only been with the Cubs for a couple of seasons. He's not a 300 hitter. He doesn't hit 30 home runs a season. But I think Cub fans just recognize the role he plays in nurturing this team and being a calming effect on everybody on the team. All the adulation, and it's rightly deserved, but even for Eddie Vedder to get up there dedicate his song to him in the seventh inning and for the fans to go nuts whenever he comes to bat. How did that happen? How did a guy who's not even an everyday player, let's be honest, he platoons with two other catchers, how did he become such a phenomena over on the north side?
You know, I've been trying to think of a comparison in Chicago sports, a guy who somehow just is a role player.
Yeah.
A kind of a guy who is not a star,
yeah,
and yet gets all this adulation from the fans, and clearly his teammates love him.
Sure.
And Anthony Rizzo talked about him after the game as a father.
He's like another father
and another brother.
I know.
At the same time.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, who are guys like this in Chicago? I mean, Judd Bushler with the Bulls? Who else it would be? I mean, it's hard to come up with a comparison. It's pretty remarkable. Although I will say Eddie Vedder made one little mistake when
he was up there.
Because he said he's behind the plate.
Oh.
And at that point, I believe he had already been pinch hit for.
Yeah.
And was no longer in the game. But whatever. We can overlook that.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, it's just sort of one of those things where I think reading the stories from the clubhouse about how the players had latched onto this guy, I think resonated with the fans. And I think they became more and more aware of it and then sort of saw how he was enjoying the whole experience and kind of, maybe it's sort of an everyman kind of thing where fans could sort of relate to him.
Sure.
Because he sort of had that look. And
You also think the side story of realizing that we all know our days are numbered, whether it's the job that we have or just the fact that we're on the planet. So to some extent, we all kind of get the fact of it's the last summer for him. It's the last time to enjoy what he's done so well for so many years. So maybe that's part of the soap opera that is David Ross.
Yeah, but he's only done it here for a couple of
years. A couple of short years.
That's the weird part,
isn't
it? I mean, you're right. And there is something to the idea that, okay, this is his farewell tour, whatever, but it's not, I'm trying to think of a comparison. This isn't Andre Dawson's farewell tour. This is David Ross's.
I mean,
it's just, he's not a guy who's been a dominant figure in Cubs history.
Yeah, right.
So, but it's, I think it's very cool that the fans really appreciated him. I know that you and I talked before about the curtain call he took in the last home game of the regular season when Joe Maddon got out and made a change behind the plate to give him the chance to run off the mound.
One of the greatest moments of the season.
Then there were a lot of purists who kind of took exception to that.
I know.
It's entertainment. And see, here's the whole thing, the point I've been trying to make. Joe Maddon referred to this last night after the game. He said, if you're a baseball fan or thinking of becoming a baseball fan, for entertainment value, this has been great.
Mm-hmm.
The last night was really great. And we lose sight of the fact that all sports are entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are in the entertainment business.
Sure.
I mean, they're going to put on Halloween costumes when they fly to Cleveland tonight.
I know.
I mean, they kind of get it. And so when the question has come up, is the Cubs season a failure if they don't win the World Series? I ask this question. Were you entertained by them?
Thoroughly.
How many hours of entertainment did they give you this summer?
Many, many.
Yeah. So, and does everybody who's a Cubs fan anyway want to see them win the World Series?
Yeah.
And probably some people who aren't Cubs fans. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still, if they don't win it, how much fun has this whole summer been?
A lot. An insane amount.
Right.
All right. We're talking about last night's Cubs game and the rest of the season. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder still off. Dave Ennett joining me. It's WGN. Dave Ennett is here with me. Bill Leff. We're talking about last night's Cubs game, the whole weekend's worth of Cubs games, and then what's to come in Cleveland on Tuesday night and hopefully Wednesday night. Dave, we were trying to figure out how David Ross has reached the superstar status that he has, and we were trying to think if there's been somebody else in Chicago sports that even comes close, somebody who's not an everyday player, who's not one of the biggest run producers or goal scorers or you name the sport. Anyone coming to mind for you?
You know, I mentioned Judd Bushler.
From
the Bulls. I mean, there are probably other guys on those Bulls championship teams you could come up with.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been guys like that. I mentioned I was looking at the White Sox World Series team, Jeff Blum.
Sure.
Who had a big home run and extra. But, you know, again, there was one significant feat that he performed, I think, that did that. In a way, maybe even an Andrew Shaw.
Oh, yeah,
you
I
know,
can
a little
see...
bit. I mean, he was a
much more productive member of the Blackhawks than David Ross has been.
Yeah,
right?
But he also was adored by the fans.
Right.
Probably sometimes exceeding, you know, in terms of when you're on a team with all these superstars. He wasn't a superstar. I mean, it's hard to kind of come up with the right comparison for this. And here's the other difference. This is a guy right at the end of his career doing this.
Yes.
And coming up with some unexpected hits where he didn't hit for a high average. It wasn't like he was an everyday guy, but all of a sudden he hit one out of the park.
You know what's cool is the Cubs had not just a platooning system at catcher, but they had three guys catching. Each guy had around 10 home runs, give or take a little bit. And if you put those numbers together, a catcher hitting 30 home runs for you, that's an amazing season.
Yeah, right.
You know?
I mean, it's kind of unusual the way it's worked out, but you're right.
Let's talk a little bit about Hayward in right field. He had a miserable season.
Mm-hmm.
The guy produced last year for the St. Louis Cardinals, but after signing a big money deal with the Cubs, he really hasn't. And then in the postseason, he hasn't really done much either. What do you see next year? It's a long-term deal with the Cubs.
Yes.
He's not going anywhere, so what do you do with him?
You hope that he can get his swing straightened out in the offseason.
Yeah.
And look, the guy has performed before, so I don't think there's any reason they can't fix it.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the weight of the contract. It's hard to tell. He had a hit last night. He had a couple of hits, although one was an infield single on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but still, I would take that as a good sign. Just the
right
fact that he gets on base and he gets a couple of hits, because he'd struck out three times last night before he got the single.
Yeah,
I think his last time up. So you just hope that he can get it figured out, because I think in all likelihood he's going to be here.
It's so strange. No matter who Joe Maddon has put in right field throughout the playoffs, even guys that did really well during the season, for some reason, it just doesn't seem to be paying off. He has tried four different guys in right field, and none of them have really shined so far.
Yeah, it is. It's. I'm not saying there's anything about right field.
Right.
That
right. It's not cursed. There's no curses involving the Cubs. But here's what I know. John Smoltz has mentioned this a little bit during the broadcast of the World Series, and other people have said this. All he needs to do, you got game 6 coming up on Tuesday and hopefully game 7 on Wednesday. If he gets a key hit in game 6 or game 7, even though the season wasn't great for him and the playoffs and the World Series have not been great for him, if he hits the home run that wins game 7, he's a hero forever.
Gosh. Absolutely.
That's how quickly it changes.
Yeah, it really can change quickly. And just like it doesn't take long for fans to turn on a guy who's struggling.
Yeah.
Whether it's a guy who's an MVP candidate but who gets into a playoff series and gets in a funk.
Yeah.
And we've seen it happen. And look, Chris Bryant was 1-for-15 when he hit the home run last night. So
fortunes change quickly in baseball.
They can turn around really fast.
I know that they didn't win Friday night, and I know they didn't win Saturday night, and I know last night was a tight game, but still, didn't the moment just get to you a couple of times? Weren't you watching the game or listening to the game, and all of a sudden you realize it's the World Series and they're playing it here? They keep saying the word Cubs and World Series in one sentence. Doesn't that jazz you up a bit?
Well, it did, and I was on the road with Northwestern.
I know
you were in Columbus. So Friday night, a lot of us went to a nearby sports bar to watch the game on a bigger TV than we would have in our hotel rooms.
Yeah.
And there were also a lot of Indians fans. Because you're in Ohio. So it was kind of a mixed crowd, but it was sort of a fun atmosphere.
Sure.
And then I was on the plane watching the game coming back on Saturday evening. And I felt strange not being – I was DVRing the game.
Yeah.
But then it turned out we had Wi-Fi on the plane, so I was watching it on my tablet. And it did feel weird being at 30,000 feet or whatever and knowing that there was a World Series game going on at Wrigley Field where I spent so many days of my life.
I know. But it's so comforting and exciting. And every once in a while, I was watching the game. Every minute of the game's going every once in a while, hey, it's just like my dream. That's the Cubs in the World Series.
And you know something else? People talk about the effect that HD television has had on sports and making it's so great to watch sports. And it's true. I mean, you watch the Blackhawks in HD and really any sport, the NFL. But the other thing that it gives you is the crowd.
Sure.
And Fox takes a lot of crowd shots.
Yeah.
As most of the TV sports productions do.
Yeah.
And you see the faces of the fans at these tense moments that you might not have noticed before HD and standard definition television. And you really feel the emotion when you're looking at them.
Well, I mentioned this to Wendy last week, is how religious people get in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. You see that same shot of so many people almost in prayer mode where their hands are in front of their chin. You know, it becomes a very religious moment.
And just as the other night after Kipnis hit the home run to make it 7-1, you saw so many people just heads in their hands.
I know.
Just devastated, just distraught.
I know. What a story he is, though. I know we have to take a break, but to grow up in Northbrook, to grow up a Cubs fan, he's playing for the opposite team, he's playing for Cleveland, but think about what a jolt that must have been for him to hit a 3-run home run in Wrigley, the field that you went to for years and years and years and made you love baseball. I know it went the other way. It was but I was kind of happy for him, as weird as that sounds, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, he knows he's got friends and family here.
Sure.
And he knows a lot of them. They're pulling for him and they're pulling for the Cubs.
It's
got to be strange, but that's a moment that, whatever else he does in his career, and he's already been to a couple of All-Star games.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool that he'll always have that.
Yeah.
I hit a 3-run homer in the World Series at Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
It's crazy. Dave, thanks. Appreciate it. That's Dave Edit. We'll take a quick break. Then Steve has the news and then a lot more show. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder taking the day off on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It is me, Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has another day off. She had, for those of you who don't know, a knee surgery on Thursday. She was expected to be off both Thursday and Friday to recoup, but she's taking an additional day off. She is scheduled to return tomorrow. Today, I would say half the staff here at WGN is dressed in Halloween costumes. The other half is not. Steve, you're one of the people who decided to, dress in costume, costume.
And as you know, we've talked about how I don't like costumes.
Right, right.
But I thought since this is Jimmy's last day and the big party, I would...
Give
the man what he wants.
Absolutely. Now, it's a costume that I certainly admire. I'm shocked that stores could keep these on the shelves.
I'm dressed as Bill Leff.
Dressed as me.
Got my cap on. I've got my open shirt. I don't have the jean shorts. I couldn't find those.
Oh, those were already packed away for the season.
Got my sneakers on.
Have you had to explain to many people who you are?
Everyone.
Everybody.
No, actually not true. Andrea Darlis picked it up right away.
She knew it was me.
Yeah. Some people didn't know I was in costume, which...
Well, you look like a stretched out version of me. You've got 4 inches on me, so you look like if I was put in a stretch rack and just pulled, on both ends, that would be me.
Or you could be me squished. But I figured this was a way to participate and be, it's the least costumey possible.
It's so funny how divided people are. The last couple of days, you know, they've been talking about who is and who is not going to dress for Halloween. And I could almost go down the list of the personnel here as to who would dress and who wouldn't. Couldn't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I think so. I'm not a costume person. You're not a
no.
But you've got one on too, right?
I'm dressed as me 3 minutes into the future. This is exactly
nice.
What I'm like 3 minutes in. And
like
again,
it.
The way I sell this is ask me what time it is right now.
What time is it, Bill?
It's 10:43.
It's 10:40, actually.
No, but it's me 3 minutes in the future.
Wow, impressive.
So, thank you.
That takes longer to explain than me being Bill Leff.
Right. Now, do you remember when we were kids, costumes were not quite as elaborate when we were kids.
No.
Right?
The plastic with the rubber band going around your head?
Yeah, that was the standard, is the mask that totally obscured your vision.
Right.
It was nearly impossible to see with those masks, with those little eye slits. But there were two companies that made the costumes that everybody had. Do you remember them?
I do not.
One was Ben Cooper,
mm-hmm.
Ben Cooper Costumes, and the other one was Collegeville. So if your mom took you to any store, it was usually for us, we usually went to Ford City and picked out our Halloween costumes there. And all the dime stores just had boxes and boxes of Ben Cooper or Collegeville. And the problem with them was you had the mask that you couldn't see out of.
Right.
And then in addition to that, you had kind of a vest, kind of a vinyl vest that would say who you were. It was ridiculous, really.
And they were pretty much one size fits all.
Yeah.
They were broke them down, but they never fit right.
But it was like a vest / kimono.
Right.
Like it was something,
a hospital gown.
It was like a hospital gown. That's exactly what it was. And it was so not representative of who that person was. Like, I remember one year, our next door neighbors, two of them were the Beatles. And it just, like, I never saw any member of the Beatles ever wear a hospital gown that said
right.
the Beatles
right,
on it
right.
with a guitar emblazoned on the front. It just didn't play out that way.
I was a dolphin once in one of those. But you were
a Miami dolphin or
no,
an aquatic dolphin?
I think it was the time of Flipper.
Oh, yeah.
But those plastic masks, and then they would staple the rubber, little. I can see the thin gray rubber band.
Yeah, that lasted about 20 minutes.
Right, it would
snap.
Dig into your ears and then break.
Right.
And then you'd cry.
Right.
And then you'd trick-or-treat holding your mask on your face.
Right. And most kids, they had it up over their head. Like the first three or four houses, you kept the mask on. But at some point you went, all right, I can't see.
And sweating in this thing.
Yeah. It was terrible, wasn't it? Awful, awful, awful. But then all of a sudden everybody got creative with the costumes and either moms would make their own or better companies came along.
And it's a real trend now. I mean, it has been for a while of there being very current costumes.
Yes. Timely to the
day. Candidates or criminals or...
Right.
Right.
Right. Like, how many kids do you think will come to your door dressed as Anthony Weiner today?
I was just going to say, Anthony Weiner really jumped up in the past few days.
Right. Yes. So true.
I don't think... No, that's probably a bad one.
No, you did fine. That was very subtle.
This could be his last Halloween. He's not going to be able to answer the door anymore.
No, so. Of course not. Right. Enjoy it while it can.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I don't remember when we were kids, there were no, it was your classics, you know?
Right. Your most current, the newest one would have been a pirate.
Right. That's it. And then there's always kids whose moms just give up, and that you always know that because they're either a ghost or a bum, right? If a kid comes to your door dressed as a ghost or a bum, you go, when did your mom think of this?
Right.
3 minutes ago. It just happened.
Or the kids, you get to be fifth grade or sixth grade, and you just grab a pillowcase.
Yeah.
I'm a robber.
Right. Right. I also, don't remember houses decorating a month in advance.
I don't remember houses decorating.
At all.
Right.
Right? Like, there are houses on my block that really put up Halloween decorations on October the 1st or 2nd.
Do you have, like, the huge blow-up ghosts and all of those things?
On our near our corner, not on our corner, but a few blocks down,
mm-hmm.
there's an inflatable, how would you best describe this? It's like a hearse, but it's like a hearse from another century. Like, it's the kind that, you know, was almost like a covered wagon that became a hearse with
sure.
a casket on it.
Right.
And it's gigantic. It's bigger than an actual car. It's huge. It takes up the whole yard. I don't know how they did it, but it was there the last couple of years. But yeah, nobody went through that kind of effort a generation ago.
You'd have one dad in the neighborhood who would hide in the bushes.
That was it.
And that was it.
Right. And then there was always a mishap with that, so that was a one-time thing.
Right. The little girl who fell off the porch screen.
Right. Right. We did have, when I was a kid, one of our neighbors, and I guess people still do this a little bit, while she was doling out candy at the door, he would sneak around the corner and scare the kids from behind. Mm-hmm. That was like a common thing. But I don't know.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Right. Right. Try that on other holidays. We expect that on Halloween. Try that on Arbor Day and see what you get. All right, we'll take a quick break. I got a bunch of texts I haven't gotten to. Earlier, we were trying to figure out if somebody is the equivalent of David Ross with the Cubs. If there's ever been another Chicago sports figure that has meant more to the city and more to the team. He's getting an insane amount of adulation, and rightfully so. He's helped the Cubs get to where they are. But is there another player in Chicago sports history that's done that? I got a couple of people chiming in on that. And also a very angry texter who says if the Cubs lose, it's their fault. They weren't beaten. They beat themselves. I'll explain that in a little bit, too. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder taking the day off on WGN. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Wendy Snyder has a day off. She had a successful knee surgery on Thursday, just taking an extra day to recoup. She should be back tomorrow. Steve, you and I were talking a little bit about the Cubs this morning already. This isn't the worst place to be right now. I know they're down 3-2, but that's not terrible.
Best team in baseball.
I think so. I do think so.
It's not going to be easy, but that's okay.
Nothing's easy.
No, and it's not fun if it is.
Right.
Well, that's not true.
Here's what they taught me. You know, I went to school to be a screenwriter, and now I'm not one. Did you notice that about me? I'm not currently a screenwriter.
No, I did not know that.
Here's what they taught us the first day of screenwriting class. For a story to be interesting, you have to have conflict. If you don't have conflict in your story, it's not interesting. There's been a bunch of conflict. You're down 3-2 to the Cleveland Indians. That's conflict right there.
Okay, so do we have enough conflict now?
That's plenty.
Okay.
I don't want any more conflict. Here's 847 texted this to us. You can reach us, by the way, at 312-981-7200. If the Cubs don't pull out two more wins and they lose the World Series, we can say for sure that they lost it themselves. They were not beat. A handful of mistakes by young players made all the difference so far. Now, so far, correct, but it's about to get even more correct. Listen to this. Run. Do not watch balls. I've been thinking about this the whole series. When a Cubs hitter hits one, they take a couple of extra seconds to kind of admire their work. They kind of stand back and watch where the ball goes. Those are crucial seconds, even though it's just 1 or 2 or 3 seconds. Run immediately. Don't watch it. There'll be videotape of your accomplishments. They'll show it over and over and over and over. If it's a home run, you got plenty of time to enjoy it. Run immediately. As soon as you hit the ball, run. Another one. John Lester. Sorry, hold on. I'm getting excited. John Lester. Learn how to throw to first. Steve, you've been watching this all season long.
It's amazing to me.
I can't believe it.
And it speaks that he's so good, he doesn't have to know how to do it.
But why don't other teams, the Cleveland Indians have the fastest team in baseball. They stole more bases than any other team in the major leagues this year. Off of him, they've only stole 2 in 2 starts. Any team needs to capitalize. I don't want to give away any trade secrets. But if you're playing the Cubs and you know that John Lester has not thrown to first base in 1.5 years, and I'm not exaggerating.
And even then, not well.
Right, right. I'm not exaggerating. John Lester has not thrown to first base in 1.5 years. There has not been a pickoff move in 1.5 seasons. So if you know that near the opposition, don't you steal on him every time he's on the mound all day, every day?
Yes.
How do they not? I know it's a mental block. I get it. Everybody has one about something. But he's a pitcher for a living, and part of the game is keeping runners close. Now, somehow, miraculously, teams aren't scoring off of him left and right. There's few and far between when guys score on him. But at some point during the offseason, don't you say, hey, John, there's one thing we really, really, really need to work on for next year, and that's your move to first base. You can do this. It's
or
easy.
Just work on giving up doubles and not singles.
Right. Right. You can do that. That'll answer it. I also want to say this. Did you play Little League at all, Steve, when you were a kid?
Yeah.
All right. So you'll know this.
I was on the Pirates.
Did you play for the Pirates?
I did, briefly. Yeah.
They had a great career there.
I was known for my golden Chuck Taylors.
The shoes?
Yeah.
That was your trademark?
That's what we didn't have spikes or anything like that.
No.
Played in Chuck Taylors.
These were simpler times. All right. Do you remember when they were teaching us the game of baseball in Little League and they explained to us how once you got a guy on base, the next thing you want to do is move him over, get him in a scoring position. And right. The best way to do that is to hit behind him or to bunt.
Right.
Why isn't anyone bunting in close games like this?
We've had some nice bunts. Javi Baez had a bunt for a hit.
There have been a couple.
We've had more. They call them swinging bunts, which is a crazy name.
Right.
But there have been more fully swang at balls that went 25 feet in this series than I can remember.
But wouldn't you, in a situation where the games have been decided in many cases by one run, and you understand the importance of getting a runner from first base into scoring position, wouldn't you tell guys, and everybody always goes, you can't ask these multi-million dollar players to bunt. I would. I think it's just a natural thing. If you need a run or two runs to score a game, you're playing a pitcher who's being stingy with the hits.
Bunt the ball.
Bunt the ball.
Bunt it over.
I don't get it.
Oh, come on, you're a home run hitting team?
They are a home run hitting team. And several times there have been guys up, Bryant's a great example, where I say to myself, I know the potential for a home run is here, but all I want is a run here. Just move him over. Please, just move him over. I'm not just blaming Bryant because I've seen other guys in the team also just not get the bunt sign. But I would have bunting clinics for hours with these guys when they make me the manager, which isn't happening anytime soon.
Well, not for a while.
They kind of have a good manager right now. But I'm just so surprised. It's one of the basics of baseball. Get him on, get him over, get him in. That middle part is so important. Slide him over to second and third. Bunt the ball every once in a while.
So you're all about moving from first to second.
Yes.
You're stealing the bases. You're bunting the
ball. Yes. Or second to third where a long fly ball scores you.
Medium fly ball.
Medium fly ball could score you. My wife will tell you, the reason my throat is all cashed in right now, last night for 3.5 hours, I'm chanting the word bunt.
That's an aggressive three and a half
hours last night. Bunt, bunt, bunt. At some point, my neighbors knocked on the door. They thought we were having some sort of an emergency. Is everything all right at the house? Yeah, he just keeps yelling bunt. He's in front of the TV just yelling bunt for 3.5 hours. She made me a bunt cake just to make things right.
Nice.
Thank you. All right. Earlier, when Dave Ennett was here, we were trying to figure out if in sports history there's been a story similar to the one of David Ross. And I'll explain really quickly. Then I'll read your texts. David Ross is not an everyday player. He's not a guy who hits 30 home runs a season. He doesn't steal 50 bases a season. He doesn't have 100 RBIs a season. And yet, somehow the city has embraced him. We love him. Last night, Eddie Vedder, during the seventh inning stretch, dedicated his song to David Ross. When he comes to the plate, people stand up. You get teary watching him in the dugout because you realize, especially last night, it was going to be the last home game of his career. Hasn't been with the Cubs for years and years and years, only a couple quick seasons with the Cubs, and yet we've embraced him and we love him. So who in Chicago sports history is his equal? Is there another story like this? A bunch of texts. I think the closest ones, I'll read you some of the closer ones. 847 says William Perry. I disagree. I get the part about the fan adulation, but William Perry was an integral part of the team on the field. David Ross, kind of, but not to the extent of William Perry. But kind of. That one's a close one. The other one that I saw that I liked a lot was from 708. They said Steve Kerr of the Chicago Bulls. But again, Steve Kerr was, I think, the ultimate sixth man when he was a member of the Bulls. Contributed greatly. Great with the three-point shot. But I don't think it was like with David Ross. It's still a different story.
He was my original. My first thought was Steve Kerr.
Steve Kerr.
For sure. But you're right. You're right. He was definitely more of a...
Close.
Cog.
Close. And there's a bunch of other 708 says Nick Swisher. Kind of, but not really. And then several people saying the same one that Dave mentioned earlier with the Blackhawks, Andrew Shaw. But again, I think Andrew Shaw was a lot more of a presence on the ice than David Ross is. He was more of a game changer on the ice. Certainly spunky and would get into any fray that he found on the ice, but it's still not quite like David Ross. Very, very close, but not quite. Let me get a call in or two really quickly. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Bill.
You can think of somebody who fits this?
Big Bill.
Hi.
I don't know who I'm talking to
because there's
two Bills there.
Oh, it's just me.
Oh, it's just you, Bill.
Yeah.
Because I thought maybe there's...
Steve is dressed like me, but he's not actually me.
Okay. Hey, listen, A.J. Polinsky was a catcher, and I think he kind of fills that bill. But then there's Steve Lyons. You remember Steve
Sure,
Lyons?
Psycho Steve.
Psycho Steve pulls down his pants in front of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve Lyons a little bit. Not as much as Dave Ross. And A.J. Pruszynski was beloved just because he was just so raw. But he was your starting catcher for most of that for the White Sox championship season.
He steal a lot of bases. I mean, he was kind of like, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, but both close, very close. Thank you, okay. Ken. I appreciate it. Have a great day. All right, let's do this. We need to take a break. Steve has the news, and then after the news, Rich Coase, Sven Gulli, joins us on this Halloween. Stay where you are, Bill Leff on WGN.
Doors creak and the tombstones quake.
Tombstones knock, doors wane and wake.
Happy haunts materialize.
And begin to vocalize. Grim, grinning ghosts come out to socialize.
Show business royalty sitting just to my right. Rich Coase, who you know and love as Sven Gulli, is here for Halloween. This is the third year in a row, Rich, you've been kind enough to come in on Halloween. Thank you.
So if they've got their AM stereo speakers up, I am on the right
on the
speaker.
Right-hand side, right.
Next, we'll play ping pong so you can enjoy the full separation.
It's like a Bears game, moving left to right. I'll explain which way the ball is headed all throughout the game.
No, I'm always happy to be here.
Oh, you're so kind.
I'm sorry that Wendy is not here, and sending my regards to you, Wendy, out there.
That's so nice of you. That's very, very kind of you. All right, several things to discuss with you. Number one, happy Halloween, of course.
Of course.
Of course. Number two, how are you liking the trend on television with your scarier shows? And by scarier shows, I will go with American Horror Story. I will go with The Exorcist. I will go with Walking Dead. I will go with tonight's Bears game, where where it's blood and guts. There's storyline too, mm-hmm. but it's not like the older horror films. Are you enjoying today's horror as opposed to yesterday's horror?
To some extent. I like a lot of the story stuff in Walking Dead. I can do without as many intestines, possibly.
Yes.
But yeah, with all those shows, it's still a little too much gore.
Yeah.
Infused for my liking, because I enjoy those old Universal movies and things like that. And I think again, it's like the effects taking over for the story at times. And I don't really think that's necessary.
The season premiere of Walking Dead, not last night, but a week ago, mm-hmm. Last night, has been called by many how was it worded in TV Guide? The most sensationalistic, I think they went with, TV episode in history. You really saw some things in graphic detail. And maybe that is too much at some point, huh?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the fact that it is based on the comic, which was very similar, or should I say the graphic novel.
Yeah. Yes.
I all that was in there, and that was part of the character. But again, I don't know. Personally, I think they could have downplayed it a little more. Yeah. Not shown, here's he is hitting the guy's smashed head with the bat a few more times. It's like, okay, well, maybe they could have just
toned it down a little.
Yeah, a different camera angle so you don't see the supposed dead guy or something.
Since you brought up the Universal films, the big four, the big monster four, you got your Dracula, you got your Frankenstein monster, you got your werewolf and your mummy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've debated this in the past. Which is the one you don't want coming at you in a dark alley?
Okay, we've always talked about the mummy, the fact that he's dragging that foot. He's moving pretty slow.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about him that much.
Yep. He's out immediately.
He's immediately out.
Yeah.
The Wolfman, you have some leeway with.
Yeah.
Because, full moon. Okay, rest of the time, he's not going to bother you.
Right. So one day a month.
Yeah, exactly. What is he? He's just part-time.
Right.
So now we've got Dracula.
If you can wait him out, if he's coming at you in an alley and you can just stall for a little bit of time, all right.
And by the same token, the Frankenstein monster.
Slow.
Much like your car battery.
Yes.
He's going to wear down eventually.
Yeah.
You don't have a little charger you can stick in and recharge him. So if you just keep your distance enough, he's going to eventually wear down. He's not going to be able to. So I think it's Dracula.
I do too.
Because he's got that sort of hypnotic power to him.
Yeah.
And he's also going to drain blood, which is essential for your living. Yeah. So.
You also know that with Dracula, should he be the one that gets you, you're down for eternity. You're a vampire for eternity. The other ones, worst case scenario, they kill you, you're done, you're dead.
Well, that depends, because with the Wolfman, if he kills you, yes, you're dead. If he just, bites you or something, you also become a werewolf.
Yes.
That was evident in the original Wolfman movie with Lon Chaney Jr., because Bela the Gypsy, who was actually
Maria Auspenskaya.
My son.
Can you do a little Maria Auspenskaya?
The way you walk is thorny, my son. Yeah, it sounds like perhaps I could sell you something. I have a dollar store right down the street.
But her son, Bela Lugosi, who played the character of Bela, wow, yeah. That was creative thinking there.
Yes.
When Larry goes to save the young woman that he's attacked, he strikes it with his cane, of course, with the silver head, which is why Bela dies, because he's a werewolf and Silver kills him.
Yeah.
But he also bit him.
Yeah.
And that's why he became the Wolfman.
Isn't the mythology, when you look at all the classic films, the mythology behind them is really part of the magic, isn't it?
It definitely is. And so much of it was actually created by the movies. Because, for example, you know, the famous little rhyme from the Wolfman thing, even the man who is pure of heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolfbane blooms and his underwear is tight, or whatever that is.
That wasn't quite it.
It was close.
It was very close.
But people thought, oh, this is an actual old, you know, legendary thing from Romania.
Yeah.
No, the guy who wrote the movie made it up. And people think that it really is part of this distant, you know, legacy of the
beautiful.
Old country.
That's beautiful. There was something so magical to these films, and I think part of it, and I'm sure I hope you agree, is the mere fact that they were in black and white. It added to the dreamy quality, don't you think?
I've always said that, Bill. I think that, first of all, the cinematography is so cool, and that shadow, the way that that plays into everything,
yeah.
I think it really does add into it. And another thing is, by it being black and white, I think it still kept it kind of removed from real life,
yeah.
If you think about it.
So that's true.
Same can be said of Ozzie and Harriet, I'm sure, but it really is. I think that that's part of it because it's you know when you see we're talking about the blood and guts and stuff,
yeah.
You see a color movie like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah,
you see that. There's two things where you're there: the color,
yeah.
But also the fact that it's not like over in London or Transylvania or something. It's right in a neighborhood in America,
yeah.
And that's the other thing that makes that more frightening in a way and more realistic,
yeah,
and more upsetting for people.
Oh, very, very upsetting. Rich Kose is here. You know him and love him as Svengoolie. The show airs Saturdays at 9 p.m. on MeTV. How many years now is this, Rich?
Well, I actually started in 1979 on another station.
Wow. 1979.
Yes, I
isn't know. That's a testament, though, to you and that the work you guys do over there is as good as it is. Congratulations.
Well, I'm happy you put it that way.
When we come back, we'll talk about some new Svengoolie merchandise that's available. And the original coffin, by the way, and set pieces are visible every day over at the Museum of Broadcast Communications here in Chicago. Museum.tv has all the information. And Sven, his personal website is Svengoolie.com. We'll be back in just a little bit if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff along with Rich Kose on WGN. Now that's music.
Yes, it is.
These kids today, they don't know music.
They don't know. You're kidding.
21 Pilots. That's music, sir.
21 Pilots.
I know that's the Svengoolie stuff, but is that available to the general public now?
It is, actually. It's on iTunes and also available if you go to www.wondercaprecords.com. And it's the strangest thing. Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, famous purveyor of Palisades Park and Tallahassee Lassie, one day last year, we get this email from him, and he says, hey, I'm a big fan of your show. I've been watching all the time, and I wrote a song for you. And I'm like, you wrote a song for us? He sent it, and we were like, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. So we had him come in, and he performed it on the show, and then we did a video with
so
a bunch
cool.
of celebrity cameos in it. And if you want to see it, if you go to www.svengoolie.com and go under the videos, just look for Freddie Cannon, and...
That's excellent.
Great. Yeah, we
That's
have all
fantastic.
Sorts of people. We have Penn and Teller in there.
Oh, wow.
And
impressive.
Dana Gould.
Yeah, I love
and
Dana.
John C. McGinley from their new show, Stand Against Evil. And a bunch of other people. The Soup Nazi's in there.
That's impressive, Rich. That's very cool.
It's very cool.
You know who wrote Palisades Park, by the way?
I think it was Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris from The Gong Show wrote Palisades Park. You are doing the pregame show tonight for the Bears and the Minnesota Vikings. This is correct.
Yes. Well, they said the Bears season couldn't get much more scarier, could it? And we're doing the pregame because the show, the actual game is going to air on WCIU tonight.
Yeah.
As well as on ESPN. But on WCIU, we're doing this pregame show at like 6:30, and I'm going to kick it off with what we're calling the trick-or-treat touchdown.
What is the trick-or-treat touchdown? Can you say, or would you want
it's
that to be a surprise?
A dopey bit.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's similar to like when Dave Letterman used to do the thing where kids would come to the door in unusual costumes,
yeah.
And what the costume was the punchline. We're doing something similar to that, but all the costumes are football-related.
Oh, good.
So we'll see how that'll successful be fun. That is. It will be fun.
I think the NFL may recognize you doing more pregame work for them in the future, don't you think? Is that your goal in this?
Or they will find me severely.
Right. One way or the other.
It's going to
be fun
way,
for
yes.
somebody. What movies, I'm sure you've been asked this 1,000 times, but you have seen pretty much every scary movie that's ever been made. What scares you? What have you seen that you said to yourself, oh, despite all the movies I've seen over the years, this is really petrifying me?
I'll tell you, the first movie that really scared me terribly, there were two of them. One was the original King Kong.
Yeah.
And I saw these both at a very young age. The other one was The Wizard of Oz, because that witch,
flying monkeys?
No. The
no?
Monkey, I like the monkeys.
Yeah.
Monkeys and they fly?
Yeah.
Count me in. But the Wicked Witch, there was something about her voice.
Yeah.
And just the nastiness of her that would give me nightmares.
Yeah.
It was probably the scariest thing that I remember from my early childhood.
Isn't that interesting that
yeah.
that's what would do it for you?
Well, and when I was a kid, I've told this story before, I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of the dark. I was afraid of the noise of a balloon popping. So it might have been because I had a real good hearing.
Oh, maybe.
But, you know, it's so funny that now, you know, here I am doing horror movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to be frightened of all this type of stuff.
The one for me, we used to go to the drive-in when I was a kid every Sunday night. We'd go to the triple feature at the drive-in. And I still remember the first time a movie just really, where I couldn't look anymore, was Christopher Lee in Dracula Has Risen from the Grave.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. A lot of those Hammer films like that.
Yeah.
Again, in color most of the time.
Yeah.
Which adds to it. But also, that was more gory than anything the United States was providing at the time.
Well, do you remember at the very beginning of the movie, I guess I can say spoiler alert because it came out in 1967, so if you have not seen Dracula's Risen from the Grave yet, go rent it really quick. At the very beginning, there's a priest walking near a church, and there's a bell, and there's blood just dripping from mm-hmm. the bell, and then he goes up to investigate. And I remember, not a fan of screen talking, but I'm in the car watching this in a drive-in going, do not go up into the bell tower. Do not, please, do yourself a favor. Don't do it. It was that scary to me.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one thing. Those Hammer films have always been said, you know, they're like living cartoons, and they're
yeah.
so lurid with the full color. And, you know, sex and violence was pretty much
big time.
A big part of those movies.
Yeah. And he had the Hammer films always employed kind of the same stable of actors. You saw Christopher Lee a lot. You saw Peter Cushing a
right.
lot. The same people were kind of recycled through all of those, weren't
yeah,
they?
What's his name? Michael something played a million parts in them. I can't remember his last name now. You know, I'm such an expert.
Just Michael.
Yeah,
he just went by Michael.
He went by Simplemente Michael.
That's all he needed.
And Veronica Carlson, I think. Beautiful blonde.
Yeah, that name seems to register. Yeah.
Hazel
yeah.
Court.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I
obscure.
Used to live on Hazel Court over in Des Plaines. It was just a short
named walk. For her, for the great
I
actress Hazel
was,
Court.
Yes.
But the style was so different in the Hammer films than what we saw with the earlier Universal. They really took a very different approach. A lot of times the same stories. They were using a lot of the same characters, but a very different approach to them, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Dracula seemed much more like almost an alien creature at times.
Yeah.
With Christopher Lee. And, you know, not something of this earth. Whereas Bela, you know, he was frightening.
Yeah.
But he still seemed like, well, he's a man.
Yeah, right.
But
is he the best that ever played the role, do you think? Is Bela Lugosi the ultimate Dracula?
Some people think so. But again, look at Christopher Lee. He really, you know, just what I just said, you know,
yeah.
he made it almost like a sort of alien type creature
yeah.
out of Dracula, and maybe a little more frightening as well.
I'm sure at some point, I know Wendy and I had the opportunity to talk to Christopher Lee. You couldn't find a nicer man in the world. And I even said to him at the time, I go, in movies, you're just such a monster all the time. You're always evil. And in real life, one of the nicest human beings ever.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So many people like that. Supposedly the same thing with Boris Karloff. You know, here he was such a treacherous, awful person or monster in the movies.
Yeah.
And yet he was this courtly English gentleman.
Right.
Who was
right.
very kind and very benevolent.
Yeah. You were kind enough to weigh in on this several months ago when Wendy and I brought this up. But we were talking about Dracula on the show. And I said that as a kid and still as an adult, it confuses me that Dracula, when he's wearing his Dracula garb, has a bunch of medals. Because I don't know what Dracula won medals for.
Well, I think it was for having good oral hygiene. That was one of the things.
He did have
a dentist. Instead of them giving him a toy out of the treasure chest, he would always choose the metal. It was much better.
But when I was a kid, Rich, to get my mind off of how scared I was of the Dracula movies, I would try to figure out, I go, was he a good swimmer? Was he an excellent cook? Like, what did Dracula do that earned him medals?
Aren't there, like, diplomatic things like that, decorations? And maybe it's just, you know, he was a very fine diplomat. And, in fact, today would be running for president, no doubt.
Yes.
So you know.
He would do well today.
They're going to build a wall about Romania. That would be really.
That would be today's Dracula.
It
really would. What's the movie you've enjoyed lampooning the most? Is there a movie that over the years that you've made fun of on the show that you think, now this is gold, this is money in the bank for me?
One that we used to run a lot and which we haven't had a chance to run on MeTV or even on WCIU was Matango, Mushroom of Death, also known as Attack of the Mushroom People.
Oh, I remember that.
And we always loved that because in the beginning, there's this, you know, oh, she's famous, a star of the screen and radio. And this woman is walking around the boat and she's singing one of her big songs, the lyrics of which are la 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 la.
They didn't even write lyrics.
Yeah, and there was a guy who was dressed sort of like Gilligan on there. So we used to, you know, come right out of that with me dressed as Gilligan.
Yeah.
And, you know, adding on to the La La song. And the whole thing was if you ate these mushrooms, you would turn into one of the mushroom
people. Oh, no, nobody wants that.
And if you added on a pizza, you'd become a pizza person, no doubt. But these things happen.
Isn't it funny how many movies use the title Attack of the Blank People?
Sure.
Like at some point in Hollywood, didn't they go, oh, it's already been done?
Huh?
No, you had Attack of the Puppet People. Attack of the Mushroom People. I wish those people had fought each other. That would have been a great movie.
Attack of the Eye Monsters.
I think. Yeah, there were several.
Gallbladder Attack. No, that was a different thing. I wasn't sure about that one.
Health-wise, you're good. I know you've had some ups and downs, but you're Svengoolie, so you're not supposed to look healthy. But other than that, you look great.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate your asking. Yeah, I've been doing well following the instructions of my cardiac doctor. And still, it's always a battle to keep the weight down. But and
you seem to be pulling it off, though.
Well, people, you know, when they see me on TV, you remember how they say the camera adds 10 pounds?
Yeah.
And people go, how many cameras are on you? But I'm doing my best, and I'm hoping that I can continue to be around because I'm having such a good time.
You're the best, Rich. I love you. That's Rich Coase. You know him and love him just like I do as Svengoolie. Svengoolie, of course, airs on Saturdays at 9 p.m. on MeTV. Watch Rich do the pregame for the Bears game against the Minnesota Vikings tonight. And, of course, his website is Svengoolie.com. Great to see you.
Always great to see you, Bill.
Thank
you. It's always fun to visit with you. Can I come sometime other than just Halloween?
Yeah. Come anytime you want.
Oh,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Door's always open.
All right. Well,
which
close
is why
it because
people
there's
keep
a draft
stealing.
In here.
People keep stealing our equipment for that reason. Thank you, Rich. We'll take a quick break and then some news. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder. Again, out for another day. She had knee surgery on Thursday. It was a success, but just taking an extra day to recuperate. She will be back tomorrow. Our friend Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune, his feistiness joins us right now. Hello, Eric. How are
nice
you?
Nice to see you, Bill.
Nice
feeling
to see
very
you.
Feisty today.
You look very feisty today.
I'll tell you.
I don't know
I've
what
already
it is.
Been in several arguments upstairs in the newsroom about the...
Did you start the arguments?
Maybe.
You didn't back down. I know
didn't
that.
I didn't back down because I don't because I'm feisty.
Right.
Let's start with Halloween tweets, though.
All right.
Before we get into politics.
Sure.
Because these are more pleasing to everybody. Yeah, you know, I collect tweets. Funny
I know
tweets,
you do.
So I... Last week we had some good political tweets. This week I'm going to do some good Halloween tweets. This Halloween, I'm going to dress up as me from last Halloween when I dressed up as future me.
Oh, wait, that's what I am. I'm future me.
It blows your mind.
I didn't know that was
right
a thing.
There.
All right.
My daughter wants to be something scary for Halloween this year, so she's going to carry a school fundraising packet to every door. It's a good one.
Good.
One time I wore my brother's T-shirt, and my dad asked if I was dressing up as his favorite child for Halloween.
Oh.
That was Conan O'Brien, by the
oh,
way.
Oh, that's great.
Couples' Halloween costumes always end up looking like one person went along with it in order to save the relationship, which is quite true. And this is related to that. The worst part about breaking up right before Halloween is now I have to explain at every party why I'm dressed as half of a horse.
Beautiful.
If you really want to scare everyone this Halloween, dress up as intimacy.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
After a certain age, the only Halloween costume you'll feel like wearing is Brian Wilson's bathrobe.
Good.
who's going, for your Halloween party, I'm going as a guy not going.
Oh, I like that. Somebody has just cashed out. Good.
I miss spooky and scary Halloween costumes. You can find slutty all year.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
The last one, cashier, look at all this candy. You're going to have lots of happy kids this Halloween. Me, it's Halloween?
Beautiful. Yeah. All very good. All right, let's talk politics for just a little bit. Something of a surprise, I guess, thrown our way on Friday.
Unbelievable.
What do you make of all this?
Nothing. I make nothing
zero
yet. I mean, I don't discount that it's going to have some political impact at the polls next week and as people are early voting this week. But as far as I can tell right now, there is nothing there. What happened was people are all familiar with this, but I'll go over it anyway for those who need a little refresher. But on Friday afternoon, FBI Director Comey said, you know, well, we found some new emails that are related to the investigation of Hillary Clinton. We don't know what's in them, but we're still looking into them. And then, as it turned out later in the day, according to reporting, these emails were on a laptop that was owned by Anthony Weiner, who's married to Huma Abedin, who is a top aide. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what her title is, but she's very, very close to Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And so, evidently, there are emails that Huma Abedin had sent on this laptop using the Hillary Clinton server. The server that has, you know, that she shouldn't have set up, that was a mistake, and so on. So there's a question. They want to look at these emails, which is fine. I mean, that's part of their investigation. But when you announce this, it adds this layer of import to it that we don't know, and he doesn't know, nobody knows yet, whether there's anything there at all. It could well be, as the New York Times reported this morning, that these emails are just duplicates of ones they've already looked at. Because she turned over a bunch of devices that she used. This was not her primary laptop. Now, there are supposedly thousands of emails on there, but if it's a backup, or if her email account is hooked up to this laptop, it could just be like, you know, I mean, technically, I've got laptops at home, and there's a desktop that's got my Gmail account on it, but I don't ever use it. But if you go on it, you'd find all my old emails because Gmail archives them. So mm-hmm. we don't know what these things are, whether they have anything to do with you know, this idea that Hillary Clinton was trafficking in you know, things that were classified
right
on her emails. So there's absolutely, we don't know anything about what this is. And for him to come out and say this 9 days before the election.
All right, so that's debate number one in this,
right.
Is it was Comey in fact doing his job in doing what he did on Friday, or does he have some sort of an agenda? What do you think about this?
I don't think he's got an agenda. I think he may have just thought that he had two choices. One was to tell people that he's looking at these emails, and the other one is to wait until he finds something. Now, traditionally in law enforcement, you don't say you're going to go look for something until you know what it is. You have some idea that you found something that's important. I mean, they conduct investigations all the time. The feds conduct investigations. Local law enforcement conduct investigations. The ideals of transparency don't require them to tell the public every step of the way what they're looking at and who they're looking at. They wait until they have a comprehensive set of data, some actual facts to leak. I mean, think of the Rod Blagojevich investigation,
sure,
which went on for a long time. They didn't tell everybody they were eavesdropping. They didn't say, well, we're wiretapping and we don't know what we're going to find. They just did it. And they didn't say anything until they actually had information in hand. Comey had nothing in hand. His idea was, well, if I do find something and it comes out after the election, then this reflects badly on me and on the FBI that we were concealing this. But he doesn't have anything now. And now is really the important time because, you know, people are deciding who to vote for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this is going to shake the faith of any hardcore Hillary Clinton supporters or even people who have decided to vote for her. But if there are people who are not sure or not enthusiastic about voting for her, this kind of thing, it's a bunch of smoke, but I'm not sure there's anything behind that smoke right now.
Yeah.
And for him to come out and say this, the Justice Department strongly urged him not to because it violates tradition and protocol for them to come out and say, you know, we're conducting an investigation. Because anytime someone is the subject of an investigation, it's like saying you're a suspect.
Yeah, right.
It throws a taint on you that it's very hard to get rid of. And especially, like I said, and now it's 8 days until the election. And I just thought it was, you know, my feeling is that if you don't have anything, you don't know what you've got, you can't say, well, I'm looking at something, I don't know what it is.
Right.
That's not fair. That's not fair to Hillary Clinton. So, you know, it's possible that this move, which I think I look at it as him covering his own rear end.
Yeah.
It could end up tilting the election, which would be staggering.
Yeah. If you're Hillary Clinton, do you part ways with Huma Aberdeen at this point, or do you ride this out?
I don't think you part ways with her because you don't know if there's if she's done anything wrong. I mean, she apparently didn't tell the FBI about this laptop, but if it's her husband's laptop and she used it once or twice, it could have slipped her mind. Now, everyone is out there going, oh, yeah, sure, it slipped her mind. But, you know, she's dealing with her own laptop, her own desktop, her own phones, and she turned those over. And then to think, oh, yeah, once or twice I used my husband's laptop. You know, it could easily have slipped her mind. Now, I could be wrong about this, and we could find out in a month. Like, this is where they were parking all their illicit emails and all their Clinton Foundation stuff and all their classified information.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. I think what you're going to find is there's absolutely nothing here, and that we may find this out in December.
Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was absolutely nothing there. It was a complete false alarm, but it's
it could have swayed the election.
It skewed the election, and it's possible. This election is tightening. Every poll that I've seen, we're now within the margin of error in a lot of swing states. We're the margin of error nationally. You know, a week ago when we were talking about this, it looked like, you know, Hillary was running away with it. This week, it doesn't look like that. And you know, part of that is that Donald Trump has not said much in the last week.
Isn't the word laptop incredibly ironic, considering the fact that we're discussing Anthony Weiner?
Oh, God. The whole thing is completely ironic. I mean, Anthony Weiner is this, you know, legendary sleazeball,
right.
No self-control.
Who could, at this point, as you just pointed out, influence the presidential election?
Right.
I mean, it started out he's a sick puppy, but at this point he could alter the course of America with this election.
Have you seen the documentary Weiner?
I've not. Everybody keeps telling me I need to.
It's really good, and it you know, he was a prominent congressman from New York, and he gets into this sexting scandal and has to step down.
Yeah.
And then he's running for the mayor of New York, and he's doing okay. He's mm-hmm. getting some traction because he's a very good politician. I mean, say what you will about this guy. He's good on the stump. He's a good talker. He relates to people well. Adults.
Yeah. People who are not adults,
people
we find
who
out.
Are actually in front of him.
Yeah.
And then another scandal breaks out, and this is what this documentary deals with is this compulsive man, and then of course just recently there's this third scandal that's broken out where he's allegedly been texting and sexting with underage girls, and so this comedy turned into tragedy, and then suddenly but it did seem very isolated in a way. It didn't seem like it was that big a story, really. It was
right.
just kind of lurid and interesting. Now it may be
one
of the biggest
story.
Political stories, you know, of the decade.
Explain the omnipotent attitude that many politicians have, that no matter what is thrown their way, they can somehow dance around it or deflect it or ignore it. I don't know if any other profession has that many people involved that just feel like no matter what I do, I can get away with it.
Well, I think it's part of it is that I don't know about with a congressman, but when you're at the level of someone like a Hillary Clinton or even a Donald Trump, even though he was in business most of his life, you have people who are deferring to you all the time,
mm-hmm.
who are, you know, everything that you want, you get,
mm-hmm.
Every whim you have. So that there's this sense that the rules don't apply to you. The normal rules of conduct don't apply to you. This is the big criticism of the Clintons, and I don't think that it is completely unwarranted. I mean, there's some sketchy stuff that they've done over the years. She was not my first choice to be the Democratic nominee. I still, you know, still wish it were Joe Biden.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
But you know, given that, I think she's still within the boundaries of a normal politician.
Right.
You know? I mean, and
right.
And my feeling about Trump is that he is way outside those boundaries.
Did you see this clip with Trump that came out over the weekend? And it's from years ago, but it's him in Australia making a speech in this huge auditorium in Australia. And he's belittling this former Miss Australia, and he brings her up on stage, and he's ripping her in a loving way, but it's very, very cruel. Have you seen any of this?
Yes, and then he makes like an orgasm joke.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really distasteful.
And he said that if she hadn't have introduced him, that's his beef with her, is that originally when he was announced, she wasn't going to introduce him, but then she ended up showing up anyway. And he said, if she didn't show up, I would have said how stupid she is. She isn't, but I would have said it anyway, and it gets a huge laugh from the audience. Very uncomfortable.
You know, one of the most popular columns I've done this entire election cycle is one I wrote last week about Trump's ignorance of the Bible. You know, he's always waving the Bible around on his speeches, saying, this is my favorite book. The Art of the Deal is my second favorite book. Nobody reads the Bible more than I do, is what he says. But, you know, when people ask him, you know, like, well, what's your favorite verse of the Bible? He gives all these strange answers. The first time he was asked this, he says, well, that's very personal. I don't like to I don't like to signal out in any one verse. And someone said, well, are you more of an Old Testament guy or a New Testament guy? And he said, oh, they're both so great. They're both, you can't pick one. Next time he's asked, he says, well, I really like an eye for an eye.
Oh.
He does say that. That was the third time. He says an eye for an eye. Now, an eye for an eye is the Bible verse that in the Sermon on the Mount, it's an Old Testament verse. It's in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus specifically repudiates the eye for an eye. He specifically says, you've heard this, but, you know, that no longer
is a better way.
No longer applies. Yeah. Another time he's asked, he says, I really like the part in Proverbs that says, bend not to envy.
Oh.
Well, guess what? Guess what's not in Proverbs?
That
is not in Proverbs. So there's this widespread belief that the guy has no idea about the Bible, and he's just making it up, and evangelicals are still going for him.
How about that? Eric Zorn is here. Yeah, he's feisty. Did you expect anything else? If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. Wendy Offer today on WGN. Weekday mornings, it has everything you need to know and some things you need to see. It's WGN-TV Morning News, Chicago's must-watch morning news. It's Bill F. Wendy Snyder has a day off. Eric Zorn is here from the Tribune. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. Sure, there's a presidential election a week from tomorrow, but there's other elections as well, Eric.
It's really interesting if you look at what's been going on in the state. And again, it doesn't get the kind of attention that you might want, but we have, first of all, there's the comptroller's race, which is the only statewide race. They're pouring millions of dollars on both sides into who's going to be, you know, the person who writes the checks for Illinois. It's an office that people arguably think should not even exist. It should be folded into the treasurer's office as it is in many states. But you've got this office, and it's become this proxy battle between House Speaker Michael Madigan, the Democrat, who's been there, he's been in charge 31 of the last 33 years, and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. And so they are fighting it out on that battlefield. But also throughout the state, there's a whole bunch of state legislative races. The state house, every seat in the state house is up, and I think 2/3 of the Senate is up. I'm not sure what percentage, but in many of these races, the ones that are contested, they've also become proxy battles between Madigan and Rauner. And if you've been watching these commercials, and how can you avoid them? They're everywhere.
Constant.
And it's all, you know, Mary Martwig is a tool of Mike Madigan.
Right.
And every ad that goes against a Democrat who's running for the state, for the General Assembly, tries to make it look like they are best friends and you know, on the hands of Michael Madigan as he works their puppet strings or whatever. And the ads the ads for the Democrats attacking the Republicans all try, you know, to say Rauner Trump. They try to put Rauner and Trump together, which is, you know, I mean, it's not totally fair in that Rauner has not openly endorsed or even said he's going to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
But he hasn't said he isn't. And so they're
the clip that they use is him saying over and over and over again, because they keep rerunning the same line, is I will support the Republican nominee for president. He doesn't say Trump by name.
Right.
He says that.
He's the leader of the Republican Party in Illinois. And, you know, I understand that as a party leader. It's difficult. Mark Kirk, may his candidacy rest in peace, because I think he's done, the senator, because of what happened last week. We can touch on that if we have a second here.
Yeah.
But you know, he has actually come out and said he is not voting for Trump. He's going to write in somebody else or something, but he's not going to vote for Trump. He's distanced himself from him. And so has Bob Dold, who's the 10th Congressional District. Is that your district?
I think it is,
up there in North Shore, with those fancy places where you live.
Yeah, the mansions.
He also has distanced himself from Trump. But it's hard if you're a state party leader. So, but the Democrats are trying to lump them together. Just touching on Mark Kirk, you may have hit this on your show, but on Thursday night's debate, Tammy Duckworth is talking about how, you know, she's a daughter of the American Revolution. Now, she's half Thai,
right?
Immigrant, and her mother was Thai, but her father was an American, and they traced their lineage all the way back to the Revolutionary War. And Kirk didn't really get this, and so after she talks about this, He is given a chance to respond. He says, well, Tammy, I didn't know that your family came over from Thailand to fight with General Washington. which was it was either ignorant or racist, maybe both.
It was a strange comment,
but
wasn't it?
Has he retracted
any of that or not?
Oh, yes, he did. He apologized for it the next day. But the whole sense of it was that he had kind of lost control. This all plays into his whether he's still capable of being a senator after his stroke. It was such an ill-advised remark,
yeah.
And he had been fairly aggressive during that. During that debate, he had interrupted her some, and he had come on very strong, I think, trying to show that he was up to the push pull of the Senate, and the headline of that out of that debate would have been Kirk on the attack. It would have been a pretty, but instead he stepped all over it, and then he lost some prominent endorsements. So it's a pretty big thing. Is that Steve Bertrand over there?
Nope. He's dressed like me.
Oh.
That's me. You're sitting
like
over there.
It's a Steve Bertrand costume.
That's who
it's
it
my
is.
Halloween costume.
Yeah. We have a great podcast, Bertrand.
Oh, I know. The Mincing Rascals.
Yeah, we let some other people on once in a while, but it's basically me and Bertrand.
And where can people hear this podcast?
It's on WGN Plus. It's on iTunes. It's on Google Play.
It's all the rage with the kids.
Everywhere. All the kids are listening to podcasts.
The kids love it. Eric, thank you.
It's good to
have a good rest of the week. It should be exciting next week.
I wonder what we're going to talk about
next Monday. We'll find out. Stick around. We'll find out what Steve has coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Tim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder, quick update on Wendy. She had knee surgery on Thursday. She was expected back in studio today. However, there have been some slight complications with the pain-killing medicine, and she felt it best to take another day to recuperate. She is scheduled to be back on air with me tomorrow. But thanks for everybody who has sent – many people have sent some very, very nice texts in, hoping that she get better soon. And she is. She's getting better quickly, but needed one more day to recuperate. So expect her back on the show tomorrow. Kim, I can only see part of you in the monitor. It looks like, now you're one of the people, the staffers here, who did dress for Halloween.
I did.
Are you a rabid Blackhawks fan? Is that what you are?
No, can you not see what my hat
says? I can only see part of it. No,
it's camo. It says Make America Great Again.
Yes.
I'm a Trump supporter.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Oh, about that.
I'm dressed as a Trump
supporter. Halloween is really the only time you can say that with
exactly.
a straight face. How about that?
Most I have of my Donald Trump T-shirt.
Oh, I can't
see
that.
See it.
No, it
it's
looked
a
like
pumpkin
a
pumpkin that looks like Donald Trump.
Oh, can now see I it? See it. Yeah, it looks great.
Does make Halloween great again?
I like it. I like it. You know, Kevin asked me a question during the break, and I think I can throw it your way. You're of course a mom, and I'm a dad. Kevin does not have kids yet. He just got married, for heaven's sakes, a month ago.
What's he waiting for?
He should have some kids, Kevin.
We're waiting.
Oh. Everybody's in such a hurry now. Kevin said to me, we were talking about trick-or-treaters, and he wanted to know if we get a lot of them, and we do at my house. But he said that process of taking your kids out to go trick-or-treating, did you find that enjoyable? Before I answer, when you took the boys, when the boys were little, that was a good time, wasn't it?
I loved it. You know, and I lived in Kentucky where the weather usually was a lot nicer, too.
Yeah.
You know, and I would trick-or-treat for a while. And our one subdivision that we lived in used to have like a big block party first.
Oh,
and
nice.
Everybody would bring stuff. And then the kids would just go and trick-or-treat
yeah.
after that. And it was a lot of fun. You get to see your neighbors and people you don't see all the time.
It was a blast,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was great.
I loved it, too. I had such a
I
good time.
I miss it, really.
I do, too. There's something to be said for, you know, manning the door or personing the door, I guess, on Halloween, where you get to see all the kids as they approach the house. That's cool.
And then
but
doing school
out,
Halloween parties was always great. I love that.
Loved it. Loved
yeah.
it. That's one of the things. I mean, everybody already knows this if your kids have grown up, is that there's so many little moments like that, little milestone moments from their childhood that as they grow up, you go, oh, is this the last time this is going to happen? That's kind of how I feel now with Halloween. Great to see other kids as they come to the door, but I miss that night of just going out door to door. And I was always trying to convince my kids, because neither of my daughters are big into sweets, but I am. So I would try to convince them, come on, we can do one more hour. Let's just get out there one more hour.
Yeah, they knew. Just pass me the Almond Joys and the Milk Duds, and I was very happy. The rest they could keep.
Have you seen the thing? Jimmy Kimmel does this every year. I mean, it hasn't been Halloween yet, so I don't know that he'll do it tonight, but he's done it the last two or three years.
Oh, yeah, with the kids with the Halloween candy.
Where the parents steal they tell the kids, they videotape their kids as they tell them in the morning that mom and dad ate all their candy. And the kids, of course, as you would imagine, go absolutely berserk on the parents.
Yeah.
It's so
awesome.
Cruel.
It's great. Yeah. It
but
is
so
really
funny.
Cruel, but it is good. It is good.
What's the most inventive costume you remember your boys wearing when they were growing up?
One of my boys was Howard Stern one year. I thought that was a really good one.
That's very funny.
Trying to think. You know, we had the classic football player, Ninja Turtle, Power Rangers.
Yep.
That was the time.
All classics, all standards.
Exactly.
I can't remember one. My daughters were Disney characters many years. There was always a Snow White or a Tinkerbell or a Cinderella or something like that. I'm trying to remember any that were like your Howard Stern version that were incredibly out of the usual. But yeah, that whole process of picking out the costume, getting it on them, the anticipation, the door-to-door. Kids are always a little bit leery, you know, if it's a neighbor they don't really know. So you have to assure them, I'm with you, everything's going to be fine. But boy, do I miss that.
My nephew actually has got a great costume tonight. He's Colonel Sanders.
I love
he has
that.
A white suit and the white beard and the glasses and
I
the
love
hair.
That.
It's going to be fantastic.
You know, I was that in first grade. I was Colonel Sanders. And I remember kids not being sure who that was. The teachers knew because we had to wear our costumes at school. All the teachers got it. I was Colonel Sanders. But a lot of the kids were, are you your own grandfather? They weren't quite sure who I was.
Well, you know, and he's using the KFC bucket as his trick-or-treat bucket.
Perfect.
You know, we're from Kentucky. So.
Right. It's a
little,
salute.
Exactly.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We have a big show for you. Wendy, again, taking the day off. She should be back tomorrow, but a lot coming up, including we hinted at this on Friday. We wanted to have John on with us on Friday. Time did not allow that, but John Vincent, whose stirring rendition of the Star Spangled Banner has opened up more than one Cubs game through the playoffs. What an amazing voice on John Vincent. He'll be by later on, and then a lot of other surprises. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off, recuperating from a knee surgery, a successful knee surgery on Thursday. She will be back with us tomorrow. Jack Amberg is here, the vice president over at the Federal Savings Bank. Jack served our country for 26 years as a U.S. Army lieutenant colonel. Also joining us, Justin Hamilton, a mortgage banker for that same bank, Federal Savings Bank. He served 5 years in the U.S. Air Force as an EOD, that's an explosive ordnance disposal technician. Jack, really quick before we get to the meat of this, you know a little something about knee surgeries, don't you?
Yes, I do. I've had about six knee surgeries. So.
Six?
Yes.
So Wendy's got, she's on number two. She's got a ways to go before she catches up
but
to you.
She'll be fine if she pays attention to the physical therapist. They don't have to, physical therapist doesn't have to be nice. You just got to do what they tell you to do to get better.
That's it. That's all you need to know. This segment, our new Military Monday segment, which we'll do every other Monday, is sponsored proudly by the Federal Savings Bank. Guys, thank you for being here. Really appreciate that. Let's talk a little bit, Justin, if you wouldn't mind, about what you did for 5 years. And I want to thank both of you for your service before we go about, above and beyond anything else. 5 years in U.S. Air Force, and then you worked as in the EOD, the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Technician. You and I were talking about this beforehand. This is similar to the movie Hurt Locker. This is where there's an explosive device, and it's your job to go in and defuse this device, correct?
Yes, sir. And I just want to thank you guys for having us on. So as an EOD technician, our primary role was to render safe explosive hazards, whether that be IEDs, conventional weapons, also nuclear and chemical and biological weapons as well. So it was our main job to, you know, keep people safe by neutralizing explosive threats.
You have to have nerves of steel to do this. There's no other way, is there?
A little bit, and some great training.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Talk about that training. How do they train you to do something like this?
Well, it's a very intensive training program. It's 8 months long at Eglin Air Force Base. It's literally a pass-fail test every day, 6 days a week.
And, yeah.
It's like taking a drink out of a fire hose.
Yeah. And when you actually go and do this, how does it differ from the training? I mean, you know for sure this is for real this time. This isn't a staged event. This is real this time. But what's going through your mind when you're doing something that's this volatile?
Well, it's practice like you play. So we literally create training scenarios that are as realistic as possible, short of having live explosives in front of you.
Jack, you and I met last week, and you said something that I never really thought about, but boy, is it true. When many of us civilians meet people who have served time, we do what I did at the beginning, and we thank you for your service. But you brought up the fact that the service goes beyond you, beyond the military person. It's his wife as well.
Right. And I also thank everybody for paying for it, because at the end of the day, we were stewards of the American people's money. But what's amazing is when you do deploy, it's easier actually on the service member. It's the family that doesn't really know what's going on. They have no idea what could happen next. For that family member left home, if the phone rings, if the doorbell rings, they don't know if it's the chaplain and something has happened. So it's very stressful for families. So the only thing I would encourage is, folks, if you're going to thank the folks in the uniform, please thank their families also.
So for many of us, that's what you just said is a very foreign experience. The phone ringing is an everyday thing. The doorbell ringing is an everyday thing. But the fear factor involved with that is this the news that I most dread? That's a nonstop entity, isn't it?
It is when you're deployed. It absolutely is. And that's where folks, when they're stateside, and there's a lot of organizations that are able to do it, have networks of folks to help. In Illinois, it's a little bit tougher. There are some great organizations out there that can help. But when you're on a base, at least, you have other wives, spouses, husbands, and so on that you can talk to. So you have someone that can share, you can share that with.
All right, give me guys a little bit of history about Federal Savings Bank and why they're doing such a great job in helping vets.
Well, to put in perspective for what it's worth, the Federal Savings Bank right now, the 300 banks, organizations that are authorized to provide VA mortgages in the country, we are number 13 when it comes to volume. When I say that, though, we haven't been around that long. The bank was initially Chicago Bank Corp, and we wanted to become a federal bank so we could loan it all 50 states. So we made that adjustment. And one of the things we really like is having other veterans join us. Our culture is very military focused. When I say that, the military focus is the mission focus. We have to accomplish the mission. You heard Justin's story. And if you've got a guy that's willing to grab a bomb and you know, make it safe again, can you imagine how well he would do with you if you just need a mortgage and be able to buy a house?
How did that transition play out for you? I mean, you were in a very volatile situation. The banking world is also volatile, not as volatile as what you experienced in the past, but I have to think your experience helped you in what you do now.
Yeah, I think absolutely. So funny story, I met with a big-time agent. I was literally 2 months into this process, and he had asked me, how long have you been doing this? And I just was straightforward. I said, I've been doing this for 2 months.
Yeah.
And he kind of was like, well, why would I use you? I said, sir, I disarm bombs in the military. You know, the mortgage industry, it's going to throw you some curveballs, but it's nothing that I can't handle. And he's been a great partner with me ever since.
That's a healthy way of looking at it. Last week, Jack, when we all sat down, Wendy was here at the time too, and other members of the bank were with us. You talked about that transition of what life was mm-hmm. like and mm-hmm. what life is like now. Just go into a minute or two for us.
Sure. So when folks are coming out of the military, the experience is really kind of different. It takes normally basic training would be at least 13 weeks to go from a civilian to a sailor, a soldier, an airman, a marine, a Coast Guardsman. And yet when they get out, it's anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden you're a civilian again.
Yeah.
That transition can be tough. One example with that would be, and I call it the decision model, and I got this from one of the psychologists at the Jesse Brown VA Hospital. In a combat theater, troops make about 3,000 decisions a day. Seems fine. Do you have any idea how many folks make in the civilian world?
Double or triple, I would guess.
It is triple that. It's about 9,000, because in the civilian world, you make decisions on whether you're going to shave, what you're going to wear, what route you're going to take to get to work, what you're going to eat. Those decisions aren't made in the military. And so understanding in the transition, and we've all read about it, the veterans are overwhelmed. Understand why they're overwhelmed, and I think you can help them land a little bit easier.
Yeah. Guys, thanks for this. It's Military Mondays. It's a new feature on the show. We'll be doing this every other week. It's all sponsored by Federal Savings Bank. Jack, if people want to get in touch with Federal Savings Bank, their best option is?
Well, they can actually go to the website, federalsavingsbank.com. And if there are any veterans looking to get employment, it's jointfsb.com. So jointfsb.com.
Very nice. Jack, great to see you again. Justin, great to meet you. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you being here. We will take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Thank you, Steve. Steve, when I was doing nights here at this station at WGN, the overnight show, there was a segment I did from time to time called You Be the Judge.
Yeah.
And it was called that because I would raise a little conundrum on the air, and then we would ask the audience to be the judge. We're going to do a little bit of that in just a little while. But first, a friend of mine, a friend of the show, a friend of the families, a friend to all of America, Jimmy DeCastro has just stepped into the office.
Jimmy.
Today is Mr. DeCastro's last day.
Oh, please tell me I don't have to go, Bill.
No, you have to go.
Not here, maybe I could be the Bill and Wendy show.
No, you have announced that you're leaving. I have no say in this.
No. You be really funny, and I'll be inquisitive.
Do you want to do it that way?
Yeah, the Bill and Jimmy show.
I'm up for that.
Wendy, wherever you are, I hope you're well, but you can stay a little longer. I'm here now.
You're here. Jimmy's here.
Hi, Bill.
Dressed as Hamilton.
I would be Alexander Hamilton. And as I said, in the words of Alexander Hamilton.
Can I surprise you?
I am
currently writing a musical based on your life. I hope for it to be a
I hope
hit.
I can play it. Well, after I do a show with you, maybe I could play it.
All right. I can see that happening. All right. There's a lot to discuss with you. But first, I want to say this, and I mean this as sincerely as I possibly can. I love you, and I will miss you so much. It's immeasurable how much I will miss you.
Well, that's really sweet that you would say that, Bill. And I feel the same way. I've been a fan of yours and Wendy's separately for years and years. And to get you guys back together, the magic in the bottle that you guys have. You know my wife, Annie, you know Jerry,
sure.
And myself. We were not big GN listeners. And now we are such crazy GN listeners. And
yeah.
Every part of the station we can listen to. But absolutely one of the most fun, one of the most entertaining is your show.
Oh, you're very nice.
And to watch you from years ago when I knew you. And radio has changed lots, and there's been lots of people in and out, and it's changed. But to stay the course and to do what you're doing now, I think it's the best radio you guys have ever done.
Thank you.
And I think this is the best place for it because you really have a chance to learn and build your craft.
Yeah.
And that's the audience. That's the people. That's like the hallways.
Yeah.
I'm sweating a little in my Alexander Haig here or Alexander Hamilton, because hello, Kev. How's married life, brother?
By the way,
Kevin is a star. You have no idea, audience, of how good this guy is to put up with these two.
Oh, yeah.
He's smiling all the time. He has a body like Jimmy DeCastro. And he outkicked his coverage by marrying a more beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And every time I look at them, it's like I have a boy and girl crush, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, how can you not?
I mean,
it's impossible
amazing,
not to.
No, but back to, there's a party raging upstairs. Everybody that showed up in a costume today gets a half day because what are they going to do, fire me?
Right.
So I've got work, 3 drinks into work upstairs, so nobody has any idea.
Oh, good.
It's a holiday for everybody. So thank you for letting me come by
and be a part of
this really special, special show.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for putting this very special show together. When you came here a couple of years ago, there was optimism, certainly, but you made that optimism pay off. You had a wall full of dreams, and we all looked at the wall, and because I knew you, I said, these aren't just dreams. This man is going to make these happen, and you did.
Well, go back up and look at the wall. There's a lot more dreams up there,
more?
Which is great. And that's also part of the fun about this place. You know, we've talked an awful lot about how great GN is, but the truth is it's the people. It's the hallways. You know, you walk in our hallways and you have fun. If we meet at the sub shop or we go for Starbucks or I'm sweeping the Walk of Fame to get ready for you and Wendy. Tell her I'm getting Wendy.
Thank you.
It's a special place because of the attitude of all the people here.
Yeah.
And it's about radio and it's talk radio and it's 720, but it's more than that. It's audio, video, digital, social. It's how do we get great content? How do we tell what Chicago's thinking and feeling, and how do we share it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and mm-hmm. And have some fun with it? That's what you guys bring, which I think is so special.
Well, that's the difference. If I can return the compliment, that's the difference between what you and Larry and Todd and Stephanie bring to this industry as opposed to so many others is you encourage us to take chances, to walk on a very thin ledge. And a lot of people in this business say, no, play it safe. You don't want to take those chances. You guys are the exact opposite.
But think of all the times that we tried to play it safe before and couldn't, or failed, or didn't do it right.
Yeah.
You know, playing it safe for us is like having fun.
I know.
You know, I mean, come on.
I know. I mean,
we don't ask for forgiveness.
Right.
Any permission, we ask for forgiveness. I mean, that's our line. It always has been. But this place really has been special. And honestly, to be on this show and to talk to all the people that I know that I run into that say, hey, I'm listening to that show. It's great. So
thank you.
If anyone's out there listening, Bill and Wendy.
Thank you. What do you, maybe you don't have any, but after doing this for, you've been here 2.5 or 3 years now?
I have no idea. It's been so fun. I came for like a minute.
Yeah.
And it's been like 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's been 3 years. You know?
It's hard to believe that much time
has
passed.
It's crazy.
But do you have any regrets in what's gone on here? Is there anything that you wish you could have done a little differently?
I wish I could have done it a little faster.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of people that were part of this place that are very special people and didn't fit in as well as the people that are here today.
Yeah.
And now it is like, you know, the whole entree and the meal has come together.
Right.
It's, it's, you know, from soup to crazy nuts,
yeah,
like the midday show. And and I think it needs to keep building. And I think we need more people to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to be still relevant to what happens in Chicago. But such an incredible city, such pride in the city, and do it with a little bit of fun. It doesn't have to be so negative like the presidential campaign seems to be. It doesn't have to be, you know, okay, so the Cubs are never going to win again. You know, it just needs to be the way I think we deliver it here, and it's in an honest, open way.
Right.
And I really think we're driven and led by the listeners a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that there are people that get to call in. By the way, the Ecuador and Windows, was it Ruben? Was that the guy's yeah. name who called in?
From Ecuador, yeah.
I love that call. I love that promo. I hear that promo, and I want to call Ruben one day. Can I come on the air? Like, after I'm gone, can we call Ruben?
Anytime. Absolutely.
I'm going to check my Ecuadors and Windows. I am almost wetting my pants in my car you're tipping that off, and he's kind of cruising on Wendy. I mean, it was vintage GN.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, is on your first day here, when you addressed the station, we had a meeting upstairs, and everybody got to meet you, and some of us already knew you from the Loop, but other people were meeting
straight
you for
lies.
The first time.
Just straight
all
lies.
All lies. It was all lies.
Yeah, just all tell them what they think. No idea. Don't tell them anything you're thinking. And for sure, don't tell Larry, for Pete's
last
sake.
Thing you want to do is tell Larry.
He may hold me to it.
You said that day, you said this was the station that we all made fun of, but at the same time, even though we were in other places making fun of this station, we knew, they kind of knew what they were doing there.
You know what the crazy thing? Jerry Wells is upstairs, who worked, Bill knows, worked for years and years with us at the Loop and everywhere, and she said, Jimmy, you know what's amazing? Even today, the Loop and all the great things we did, it's only 40 years old. This place has been around 90 years.
Yeah.
We talk about being in the DNA of the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can't help but be in the DNA of the Cubs and of all the people that have been behind that mic and this mic. Think about everybody that's ever had any influence or any impact whatsoever in this entire city has been behind the two microphones you and I are sitting. That's WGN Radio. That's unbelievable. It almost gives you chills, and it's like a little heady. Feels a little bit like, wow, I don't deserve to be here, neither do you. I mean, come on, really, do we?
I know.
And here we are. Let's lock the door.
It's coming
come
from
on.
A man in a powdered wig.
The new Rowan Hanna show.
Do you know, I think about that every single day when I pull into the parking lot here. I think about exactly that, is that I'm working at the station that my dad forced me to listen to when I was a kid, and I begged him to listen to anything else. But we did. We listened to every one of his presets was WGN, and now here we are.
But now we've become that.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, that's a big part of the new marketing campaign we're doing, which is Generations, it's called.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, show people that it's okay to listen to this radio station, and that's what's fun about the stuff I think we're doing now.
Yeah.
And I really believe the people in the hallways, and I've said this before, a really good manager will step away and let the light shine on other great people. You brought up Todd and Stephanie and mm-hmm. the people in sales and the marketing, Jackie, and we have such stars, Kevin and Michael Heidemann, and it's just, truthfully, it's what makes this place.
Yeah.
Is it not?
It definitely is.
You walk in the hallways, and the other thing is we have fun every day.
Yeah.
Every minute of every day.
It never feels like work.
Yeah.
Ever.
I feel so bad you guys got to be on, because there's a rocking party going on right now upstairs.
It'll still be there.
I don't know. I saw witches flying around, and it was like all crazy and stuff. It's Halloween. You never know.
What will you miss the most? Today's your last day. Yep. It'll be
you.
Me.
Yeah. You.
Yeah.
You and Wendy, you know.
Yeah.
And Kevin. You know,
just
you know, going to lunch with you so many times, you would take me to lunch.
Yep.
You guys have lunch in the 720 Lounge, which, by the way, used to be a disc jockey office. We made it into a bar.
Yep.
And you have lunch in a 720 Lounge, and I never get invited. So I'm going to have my own lunch, and I'll miss you guys.
And, Jimmy, when I take you to lunch, to prove that these are nice places, I always say to you, you can get regular or extra crispy.
Yes,
it's up
you
to
do.
You.
And chips, too.
Yeah, chips if you want. And a small drink. Don't go crazy.
Please do me one favor. Keep doing what you're doing. Because you're killing it. And I say that of Wendy, too. I'm so sorry that she's not feeling well.
Yeah.
Usually, if I took pain medications, it wouldn't be a problem. You know, she's not to work on pain medications. Oh, I get it. Well, Shanice is our HR gal. Unfortunately, there's a line out there to see me.
Of course, she'll never
get in to see Wendy.
Of course. I said this at the beginning, and I'm going to say it again. There's no one else like you. You've not only changed my career, you've changed my life. I've learned so many things watching you.
And Jabari downstairs.
Yes.
Come on. Hey,
the security guy.
Hey, now, that's my family.
Everybody outside.
Hey.
The crowd is gathered.
Hey. at Hey Now.
Look at the Hey and Now. That's their costume.
It's beautiful.
Hey Now. It's great.
There's a really handsome looking Kennedy hitting on my wife. Bill, come on. Can we close the segment?
We have to close it. Yes.
Jimmy. Let's go to spots.
Thank you, thank you, and thank you.
Thank you, thank you, and thank you.
All right.
Big love.
I miss you.
Bye.
All right, bye. We'll take a quick break, and then I'll meet my new boss. You want to see some real sucking up? Wait till this goes on. More after this. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Steve Bertrand, you called the moment beautifully. Jimmy DeCastro, our boss, our general manager, leaving after today. He's been here for several years. Turned the station around, many believe, myself included.
There's no debating it.
He did. But as he's telling me all these wonderful things, he is dressed as Alexander Hamilton, and it made for a strange moment.
Right. Well, there were a few with Jimmy around.
Do you know what I mean, though, is that everyone should have a boss at some point in their life who makes a job not a job.
I talk a lot about business culture and leadership now on the Business Lunch, and it's easier now that I can see what a great leader is like.
Yeah.
You really, you know, everyone's saying it, and there's really no sense in sucking up now because he's gone.
He's gone.
But he just brought joy to what he did, and it just spread with all of us.
Yeah.
And he was just a great leader, great guy to work for.
And one of those people you can't help, like if you're somewhere and he's there,
right?
You know he's there. You notice him. He comes into a room and everybody notices him.
I mean, that's because he's dressed like Alexander Hamilton.
The first time I ever met him, I had just got hired to work with Wendy at The Loop to do the night show at The Loop. And I hadn't met him yet. I'd only heard of him. And there was a Christmas party. And he was in a gathering of people. There were five or six people, and he was kind of holding court. And all I wanted to do was introduce myself and tell him who I was and that I had just been hired and to thank him for being part of that process. And he turns around and he sees me and he puts his arms around me and he brings me into the group and he introduces me to the other five people. I didn't even think he'd know who I was.
Right.
And then I said to him, I go, we haven't really met. And he goes, I know everything about you. I know your wife's name is Terry. I know you did stand-up comedy for 10 years. I know you're from Oak Forest. I know he knew eight or nine things. And I went, he's like this with everybody.
And he was here, too. And, you know, you guys were talking about being at The Loop and looking here.
Yeah.
I was here looking at The Loop, taking those arrows for...
I know. I apologize.
And then,
I know.
You know. When it's like, so, you know, the name Jimmy DeCastro, I had no appreciation for what it meant until he got here.
Well, when you're on the outside, when because there were several stations I worked at that looked at GN as like a dinosaur ground. This was Jurassic Park for the most part. But at the same time, there was respect and there was the realization that they couldn't be number one for so long if they didn't know what they were doing and do it well.
We knew all those dinosaurs just wanted to work here so badly.
I know. All right. A quick game of You Be the Judge. Steve and I were talking about this earlier. This was a segment I used to do on The Night Show from time to time where I plead my case or I play you some audio and I tell you a little story. And then I want you to decide, is this possible or not? Here's what it is today. Listen to this. There's a mom in Michigan who has a baby who is 2 months old. The lady's name is Samantha Jones. Her son's name is Christian. So the other day, she's videotaping Christian. Like I said, he's 2 months old. And she's saying to Christian, say hello, Christian. I want you to say hello. Hello, hello to the baby. Because you do that with a baby. And then Christian either does or does not say hello. You tell me, did the kid actually say hello at 2 months, or does it just sound like he's saying hello? Here's that audio. Listen.
Can you say hello, Amber? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Wait, did that kid say hello? Now, I want to point something out. In the written version of this story, it says, turning the camera to her son, Christian, but I think she said Amber.
I heard that, too. I was confused.
She did, right? Yeah. She said Amber.
I think it's a nickname.
Right. If you have a son named Christian,
right.
Many of you know that you call the kid Amber. It's just a fun little whim nickname. That
Christian's Christian name is Christian, but they call him Amber.
Amber for fun. All right. Now, Kevin, if you wouldn't mind, play the part again with the mom and baby Christian/Amber, where she's saying, say hello, and then the baby either does or doesn't.
Can you say hello, Amber? Hello?
Hello.
Steve, you be the judge. Does that baby say hello?
Sounds like it to me.
At 2 months? How is that possible? I don't even know if we have the skill set yet at 2 months. Now, I remember when my daughters were little, It was just around the age of one. I want to say 10 or 11 months where both Reese and Kylie said their first word. One of them said hi. Their first word was hi. The other one was hot because she accidentally touched the oven and it was hot. So she learned the word hot very, very quickly. But I don't think a baby at the age of, I don't think it's possible at 2 months. I just think it's that one of those lucky moments where you had a camera running and it sounds like the baby's saying hello. Now, it says here in the story, she has since asked him to say hello to other people. And so far, the baby has said nothing, that was a one-time event, the either would be or would not be hello. But in all the other attempts since this video was taken, the mom, her name is Samantha, although they call her Larry. The whole family's got a weird thing with the names. I don't understand it. But the mom has tried to make the baby say hello other times, and so far, no luck. But I'm telling you, as the father of two kids myself, and I've seen plenty of other people with babies where they say, just say this, just say this. At the age of 2 months, that's near impossible. I can't imagine a situation where a baby would have the wherewithal to do
it. Yeah, I didn't think like at that age you can make an L sound. Like,
I don't think
that's
so.
That's remarkable, yeah.
But it is, like, all right, you know how a lot of times you'll see a videotape online of what they call a talking dog?
Yeah.
And you always go, well, that's a dog growling, but it's kind of like that word. All right. If you didn't hear the mom part, Kevin, if you just heard the baby part where it's just the baby saying hello, you'd be able to make out what the baby was saying,
right? Let's hear it, shall we? Just
do it one more time.
Hello.
Not only saying hello, but saying it with a slight British accent. Did you notice that? That's the part that isn't focused on in the story at all, but that's the part that's appealing to me. Say hello, baby Amber / Christian. Say hello, baby Christian / Amber. Hello. It's like he's in... like in a preschool version of Mary Poppins or something. Hello? How does that happen? All right, people are calling in 312-981-7200 with their opinions on this. It's a very quick episode today of You Be the Judge. Today's You Be the Judge. Is it possible that this two-month-old kid who's confused on his name, her name, is saying hello or not? Let me get a call in or two really quick. Anne, is it possible? Could a two-month-old possibly be saying hello?
I believe it because my cat can say hello.
Your cat can say hello. How did that happen?
He's up in the attic, and he calls down, and I say, hello. I can hear you, and he says, hello.
Do it. Can you do it in the cat voice? How would that sound?
I can't do it in the cat
Can't
voice.
Do it in a cat voice, just a human voice. All right.
He says hello.
And how old is the cat?
The cat's, I'm not sure because I found him abandoned, and I think he's about 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah.
But he's got him. He thinks, so therefore he is.
Oh, all right. A very metaphysical cat.
Yes.
Good. I like that. So, Anne, you're voting yes. If a cat can say hello, a baby can say hello.
A baby can say hello, yes.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye, Anne. Wouldn't it have been funnier if the mom had said to the son or daughter, depending on if the kid's name is Christian or Amber, that part's confusing to me too. Don't worry. What's your favorite Adele song? And then the kid just goes.
Can you say hello?
Oh, Kev, that's all right. We'll take this out in editing.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more babies saying adorable things. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder off again today. Just very briefly, Wendy had a knee surgery on Thursday and is recuperating. She was scheduled to return today, but circumstances did not allow that. But she will be back if everything goes according to plan in time for tomorrow's show. So I want to thank everybody who have sent very, very nice texts in, and we've gotten some really nice calls from people concerned about her. That's very kind of you all. She will be back tomorrow. Everything indicates she'll be back tomorrow. I just read a piece that I wanted to share with everybody over at MSN. A man named Tom Burns has written a piece, and it has to do with what he calls generational culture shock. He explains in the article that this isn't a new thing, that this has been going on for generations and generations and generations. And what generational culture shock is the feeling that you get, either on the parental side or on the child side, of the difference in the generations. He said there are many, many things that happened to him in his childhood that his children will never understand. And then he goes on to talk about several of them. I thought I'd share those with you. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. So again, these are things that Tom Burns, the writer over at MSN, says he was quite familiar with, but a kid today, his children, our children, probably wouldn't quite understand. One of them is something called the Wayback. A lot of you will know what the Wayback is. Some of you may not. The Wayback was a constant feature in a car like a station wagon. Kevin, you look inquisitive at the idea of a Wayback.
Yep, I'm not up on this.
What a Wayback was if you had a station wagon, and first of all, if you had a station wagon when I was growing up, you wanted to put the fake wood paneling on the side, it would make a already spiffy-looking car look even spiffier.
Of course.
All right, so you had the front section where the mom and dad sat. Then you had the back seat where the kids sat. Then you had the real back seat where the kids that weren't as popular as you were sat. And then you had another chair that was all the way in the back, another seat or two, that faced outwards, and that was called the Wayback.
I do remember that.
You've seen those?
Sometimes I preferred those, you know, it was a different perspective.
Why did you? Oh, because you saw the world backwards.
You could look it out, the back. Yeah, it was nice.
Now, a fun thing, if you were a kid growing up in the 60s or the 70s, if you were in the Wayback, this was a fun thing. I don't recommend this today, but back then it was a more innocent time, is you could take some markers and some poster board, and you would write the words, "Help me, I'm being kidnapped." And you'd hold that up in the window, and then the people behind you would see that.
That's not good.
No, you don't want to do that now. But in 1968 or 1971, that was a fun game. The "Help, I'm being kidnapped" game. You could only play that in a Wayback. All right, so that's one. He says, we used to love to ride in the rear trunk of our station wagon without seatbelts. Oh, yeah, seatbelts were not a necessity back then. Much more important now. Was this unsafe? Yes, it was, but we didn't know any better. Now, I've said this on the show before, in addition to the Wayback, my dad had a car, and I don't remember what kind it was, but it had an exceptionally large back windshield, and a lot of times on trips, I would crawl up into that section, that back windshield section, and just take a nap back there while we were driving. And I know if you look at it now on paper, if you draw that up on paper, you go, I'm not positive that was safe.
People will give you a ticket if you let your cat do that now.
I know. I believe, Steve, and my memory may be slightly foggy on this, but I seem to remember my mom encouraging me to climb up there and take a nap.
Or, I'm just going to be in Sears for a few minutes. Stay in the car.
Right. But it's 103 degrees out. Ah!
Roll down the windows.
Ah!
But I could get kidnapped. No, you won't.
Nah, you'll be fine. No one wants you, they would say. All right, so that's one of them. Here's another one that Tom Byrne says his children will never understand. The fact that phones used to be stationary. Now, to our generation, this makes nothing but sense. You could only go as far as your cord, your little spirally cord would allow. And sometimes if you didn't go far enough, you could go to the AT&T people and go, I need a larger cord, and they would do that for you.
Well, that's the other thing. To get a new phone, you had to go to Illinois Bell.
Yes.
What?
Right. There weren't stores on every block that sold you phone paraphernalia. You had to physically go to Illinois Bell and get new phone parts. But I remember, like, my brother and I figuring out when we were kids what our safety zone was. Like, if my mom was on the phone, she could only go so far and stay on the phone and yell at us for doing whatever bad things we were doing. But we knew where that area ended, right? So, you know, 30 feet from the phone, we could get away with murder if we wanted to. 30 feet within the phone, not so easy. So that's another one. How about this one? Unanswerable questions. Let me explain. He writes, Tom Burns writes over at MSN, back in his day, if I asked my dad, hey, who invented the typewriter? There was no conceivable way for him to know the answer to that question unless we had volume T of the Encyclopedia Britannica in our house. Cut to now, just 30 years later, if his daughter reacts to even the slightest pause before I answer with the question, maybe we should just Google it, Daddy. Yeah, before you had a computer in your house, if you didn't know something, forget about it. You'd have to take a night class just to learn a simple answer to something. Now you can just go to your computer or just go to your phone. The answer's a fingertip away. It's just that simple. Dave has something he wants to add. Dave, how are you?
Hey, how you doing? You're talking about years ago and generations. My dad's car was a 62 Chevy wagon with the hand crank back window.
I remember those.
Put it down.
Yep.
We drove across Canada on Upper Peninsula, and we had sleeping bags in the back, and that was how we traveled. And he also worked for, like, Western Electric and Cicero. I still got the dial phone, that one of the ones he made on the line, and it also has the pen with the steel ball on top.
Oh, nice.
The women would put it in there and dial because they wouldn't break their fingernails off in it when they were in the 1950s.
Right, I remember, sure. Of course.
I mean, you were talking that phone extension. Yeah, I mean, if you got farther than 10 feet, the thing either flew out of your hand or you pulled the cord out of the
right.
wall. So.
Right. Now you can go anywhere with a phone. Back then, not that way, right?
Yeah, and then you're talking, you know, you're going to take a class. That's like when you still had encyclopedias, and the guy would come door-to-door trying to sell you a set of them, and now it's like you could fit an encyclopedia in probably one page of your phone. It's
Well, they would if you got an encyclopedia back then. So I grew up in the 60s into the 70s. There was a guy that came to our school every year, and he would try to sell us on World Book encyclopedias. But then when you were doing a report, those encyclopedias were so out of date. You know, if you got it 3 or 4 years earlier, if you were doing some history report, the country you might be writing about might not even exist anymore.
You know, that's what they call textbooks now. Every year you try and get your kids through school, and it's only you have the wrong edition. You got to buy a newer edition
yep.
and pay more money. And then you don't get your money back because the new edition came out the next year.
How about that?
And you're stuck with a whole set of books that, you know, maybe you're missing two pages or whatever the update is. I mean, it's whoever's in charge writes history, I guess is how it goes.
That's it, exactly. You can't win, Dave. Thanks so much for the call. Have a good day.
You too.
Let me get Susan's call in really quickly, too. Susan, we were talking about the way back, and me, I used to sleep on the back windshield, but you have an even crazier memory.
My sister and brother used to sleep on the hump.
I know the hump, sure.
Do you remember the hump?
Yeah.
Behind the back seat of the car? I don't know if it was the drivetrain that went.
Yeah, I think that would house.
Try to hump anymore.
I don't think any cars have that anymore, but that was a big deal back then, a very uncomfortable big deal in the back seat, wasn't it?
It was, but it was also warm, and so my sister and brother used to sleep on that because no seatbelts.
I know. How did any of us survive? It doesn't make sense that any of us are here to this day, does it?
No, none whatsoever.
So dangerous.
But we did.
Somehow. Susan, thank you. Have a good week.
Yep, you too. Bye.
Take care. All right, let's take a quick break, and then I've got a couple more of these, and then John Vincent joins us. Again, these are things from our childhoods that our kids will never understand, common things that we all live through that today's kid just won't get. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. Wendy's off today on WGN. It is me. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder recuperating from a knee surgery on Thursday. She is scheduled to be back tomorrow. She was supposed to be back today, but needed an extra day. But she should be back tomorrow. Okay. We are discussing an article that Tom Burns has written for MSN. These are things that happened in his childhood that he said his kid will never understand. He calls it generational culture shock. It's been going on for centuries. Maybe it's a little more apparent now since we're on the adult side of it. But 312-981-7200 is our phone number and text line. If you've experienced one or more of these, let us know what it is. Let's start out with Mike. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
Excellent. You have one of these for us?
Oh, I've got one. A couple, actually. My uncle lived in Aurora, Illinois, and my grandmother lived in a little town called Pergachin, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And when he would go to call her, he would call the local operator and say, I'd like to call Mame Dozer. She'd say, well, sir, you can direct dial that. He'd say, no, I can't. Yes, you can. You can direct dial these days. He said, okay. She'd say, what's her number? He'd say, 5-9.
Yeah.
5-9 what?
That's
the number. 5-9. So then she'd have to dial the local telephone office, and the operator would go, number, please. And she'd go 5-9, and the woman would go, oh, Mendoza, of course, absolutely.
And they'd patch it through that way.
They'd patch it through.
Well, there were parts of Wisconsin that all the way into the 90s still had a party line system. You know what that is?
Oh, my God, yes, I do.
My wife's cabin was way up in northern Wisconsin, and when we would go there every summer, all the calls were on a party line, so other places could listen in on a call if they wanted to.
Absolutely, and they could usually tell when your phone rang as well. Then the other thing that I wanted to bring up was it was very expensive to call long distance.
Right.
So if, let's say, I was leaving my home in Wisconsin and I was going to go visit my uncle, so that my mother would know that I got there, when I got to my uncle's, I would call person to person to Mike back in my home, and then my mother would know that I got there, and we didn't have to pay because the person to person call did not go through.
Smart move. Do you remember this, Mike? It used to be, I don't think people do this anymore, but if somebody was on a long-distance call, they would speak very slowly and loudly because it was long distance. Like now people just get it. Okay, I'm going to get the same service. But back then, if my parents were on a long distance call to another state, they spoke very loud and very slowly.
Well, and the other thing that happened, and this was true up through the 90s as well, if you remember when they deregulated long distance, you could get a really cheap service, say, from MCI, which yeah. doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But when the circuits were busy, if MCI had to dump a call onto Sprint, Sprint would, like, overcharge them like crazy.
Right, so a service charge.
You would have this, like, really cheap call, and then all of a sudden, you'd call your uncle at Christmas time, and it's like, oh, my God, I need Fort Knox to pay for this telephone call. What happened?
Well, the same thing happens now if you leave the country on your cell phone and you don't make some sort of an arrangement with them in advance. We learned that a couple of years ago when we went to, or last year when we went to Costa Rica. If you don't call in advance and let them know where you're going to be, they tack on an incredible service charge for every text and every phone call.
Yeah.
So that's the new version of that, I guess. But great memories, Mike. Thanks so much. Have a good week.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Take care. Bye. Let me get one or two of these in. Vicky's got a good one. Hey, Vicky, we're talking about things that happen in our generation that a kid now just wouldn't quite understand. Do you have one or two?
I do. Well, I grew up in the 50s along the railroad tracks in Gary. And that's when you had the signalmen, you know, would have their flares.
Yeah.
And they would just drop them, you know, right there on the tracks. They'd be going along. Well, we had a man in our neighborhood who was a high school chemistry teacher. And so right before the 4th of July, the kids would walk up and down the tracks collecting these flares that were spent.
Oh, yeah.
And take them back to him. And then he would put them together, and he would make a big 4th of July blow up, you know, at the end.
Oh, cool.
All of the things. That, and then also, of course, the throwing coins out on the track, trying
right.
to get them flat and things like that.
The things that amused us back then, I don't know if you did this, Vicky, but whenever there was new construction where I was growing up, kids would go and try to find those little, we called them slugs. It's when they were putting in the electrical, they were shaped like coins.
Yes.
And that was such a big deal.
Right. Plus the fact that I lived right down the street from a sign company, and they would always have, you know, where they would make these signs, and they'd have these little pieces of wood, scrap wood, and the kids would go and get them, and then we'd go build things with them.
How about that?
So
simpler time, but a good time, right, Vicky? Wasn't it fun?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. In fact, talking about trains, when I was 11 years old, my parents put me on the train in Chicago, and I rode all the way to St. Louis by myself.
At how old? How old were you?
11.
11. Would that ever happen today? Would anyone do that today?
No.
I don't
no.
think so.
You wouldn't even put the kids on the South Shore and send them to Chicago.
Nope. It's changed.
So, well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Vicky. Have a great day.
I hope she feels better.
Oh, I'll tell her. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks.
All right, let's do this. I want to thank everybody for calling and texting. We have to run to news, and then after the news, John Vincent, who, again, if you've not heard John sing, he's been doing the national anthem at the beginning of some of the Cubs playoff games, and he did Game 4 of the World Series. Wow, is he good. He'll be joining us in studio right after the news, so stick around. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder taking an extra day off, and it's WGN. John Vincent is in studio with me right now. John is the man responsible for one of the most stirring renditions of the Star-Spangled Banner that I have ever heard. You heard him do it at Game 4 when the Cubs squared off against the Cleveland Indians the other night, but he's also been doing it for other playoff games. John, I've already told you this, but I'm going to tell you this again. You, sir, can sing a song. Boy, are you good.
You're too kind. Thank you.
You are amazing. We're going to play the national anthem for anybody who hasn't heard it. I know you can't sing it right now.
I don't like listening to it.
No, you have to. You really don't like listening to your own voice?
No, God, no.
Oh,
no.
How can that be?
I don't like it. Yeah, no.
I'm going to make a weird comparison, and I know I'm not the first person to do this. But have people told you that there is a Frank Sinatra element to your voice?
Yes, sir.
They have?
Yes, sir. And that's what I do at Ditka's. I sing mostly Sinatra
do you?
Songs. Yes, sir.
I know that performers don't like to be compared to other performers.
I thought you were going to say John Candy, and I'll be like,
no.
I've been told that too before.
Not John Candy. No, Frank Sinatra. John, if somebody's going to compare you to somebody, and that somebody is Frank Sinatra, you're doing something right, because that's one of the best voices of all time.
Thank you, sir.
But boy, are you good. All right, so let's play. Now, this is a little clip. Well, it's the whole song, actually, from Game 4. to get the festivity started out at Wrigley. This is John Vincent. Listen to this.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free? And the hope of the brave.
That's how you sing the national anthem.
You're too kind. You're too
John,
kind.
Oh, no. All right. A couple of things. Number one, free, when you were singing free, yes, I went out and I had a hot dog and I came back and you were still singing free. What's the longest you've held that note on free?
They said the longest I held it for was 23 seconds.
23 seconds.
Northwestern basketball game earlier this year, I believe. I think in January, if I'm not mistaken.
And you can feel the crowd as the seconds tick off and you're holding that note. You can just feel the enthusiasm, can't you?
I do, you know, and that's why I do it. I do it for that sole purpose, that the crowd feels the energy. I shouldn't say that sole purpose. The sole purpose of... there's good behind it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to show off or anything like that. I don't think, you know, I feel the crowd energized. But it all started, you know, I started doing it, singing the anthem in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done it for the NFL, NBA, you know, Major League Baseball. But I never held free that long.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was really nervous one day. And I remembered back to my father taking me to Italy when I was a boy. And I was about 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad's 81 years old. And he takes me to the piazza where he lives in this town called Palena in Abruzzi, Italy. And he goes, Johnny, I want to show you something. He goes, you see right here? And I said, yes, sir. He goes, there was a German tank right here. He goes, everybody thinks that, you know, the Italians and the Germans were on the same side. You know, we read in a history book, the Axis powers.
Yeah.
No. He goes, we were their puppets. He goes, we listened to what they said.
Yeah.
He goes, when I was a young boy, it was probably 1942, so he's probably about 7, 8 years old. He goes with my nonna Giconda in the middle of the piazza, and she says, Vincenzo, vai a go get the tarp underneath that Nazi tank. We can make pants for you kids. We could cover the firewood. Because he showed me his house. He had no heat or anything, so they would have wood to cook and put eat and everything in there.
Yeah.
So my father... and by the way, the Germans, the Nazis took over that because they had a strategic overlook, and they had to move 10 kids into a barn. I mean, I couldn't imagine living like this. He goes, well, Johnny, I go and get this tarp, this canvas tarp, and I turn around, and the soldier has a gun to your grandmother's head. And the Nazi soldier says, you can have it, but she's going to die. And my dad, you know, obviously, you know, turns around. And that's like struck me. So when I got, when I started, you know, doing the anthem and I wasn't holding it that long, it was for some particular reason, I got really, really nervous one day, and I still get nervous to this day, but I think of that.
Yeah.
And then his younger brother, my Uncle Mario, passed away of a brain tumor, yeah, who was a Vietnam veteran, and I also think of that. And yes, it is the crowd getting excited. I'm not trying to show off. I don't care about showing off. I don't care. Life is too short.
Yeah.
We're all going to be dust one day.
Yeah.
We're nothing. None of this matters. The only thing that matters is how you treat people.
Right.
You treat people nice. I don't care if you're a billionaire or a bum in the street. If you're a nice person, I'm going to spend time with you.
Yeah.
If you're a jerk, I don't want to be around you.
Right.
So if it gets people excited and gets everybody ready, and I feel my dad when I sing that, because he's on my mind when I do that, and I think of my uncle.
No, that's perfect.
That's what it
means
to me.
That's perfect.
I want to make people happy.
Well, it's working, and none of it's reading like you're showing off. I've heard you sing it a dozen times.
But sometimes you see it on the internet, and I had to talk to Coach Ditka. He goes, Johnny, you're going to get all this. You're going to get negativity if it's about, you know, weight or this or that, or it's holding it too long, or why, or off key. And at first, that really kind of affected me because I'm a real sensitive person.
Yeah.
But then I kind of like, okay, he's like, people that give negative comments are always unhappy, John.
Yeah.
He goes, they're the ones who are unhappy. And a bunch of famous people have told me this. They're like, the ones who do that are unhappy people.
Sure. That's true.
And then, you know, I just said, okay, I can't control that. I'm just going to, you know, go with the flow.
No, you have to. When you sang it the other night, the announcers over on Fox who were doing the game, you could hear them going, now that's how it's done. Wow, that's what gets the night off to a start. They were so excited. And you just got some very high praise from one of the biggest singers in entertainment right now.
I thought that was a joke. When I got a text from a friend of mine that Lady Gaga tweeted what she tweeted, I said, okay, this is a joke. And then more people started texting me that. And then I looked for myself, and I'm like, holy crap. So now that just kind of makes me – anybody could say whatever they want. After she said that, I'm like, nothing else matters. Just,
do you remember
I'll
what
look
her
at what Lady Gaga said.
Do you remember what her words were? Because we can look it up. I found it earlier, but I don't remember what it is now.
I think she said something about, that, wow, that's how you do the national anthem.
Yeah.
And put a emoji with like a heart smiley face. And,
yeah.
And wow, John or John Vincent. It was just an honor for her to do that.
See,
because her anthem at the Super Bowl, her, Whitney Houston, and Marvin Gaye are my favorites.
Yeah,
I mean, those
good.
Are just three great anthems that, you know, are unbelievable.
Well, so to get praise like that from somebody who's that good at what she does, that should even tip it in more for you.
Yes, sir.
John Vincent is here. We're going to tell you about seeing John perform locally because he's so good. You want to see him live. We'll take a quick break and then more of the show. It's Bill Leff on WGN. Bill Leff with you on WGN. Wendy will be back tomorrow. John Vincent is in studio with me. His rendition of the Star Spangled Banner is just second to none. You heard him perform it on Game 4 of the World Series just the other night. You can see John. He's been working at Ditka's restaurant since, is this right, John, since 2001?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah. I started at Rosebud on Rush, and I did a place called Nono Pino's, and then Ditka's heard about me just from a guy who worked with me. I was a recruiter in accounting and finance.
Mm-hmm.
And they heard about me because he goes, oh, my buddy's trying to do Sinatra. And I guess a gentleman was singing Sinatra there that night. They'd have a different singer every week. And the manager said, you know what? Have him give me a call. Well, I walk in there. I call him. He set up a date. He goes, come on in this one night. And I walk up, and Mrs. Ditka's, you know, at the top of the stairs. And this is Diana Ditka. Hi,
yeah.
How are you? Sing New York, New York. So I go, right now? She goes, right now. And I sang it. She goes, okay, hire him. So they gave me a four-month deal, a year, a two-year, and then a lifetime.
Oh, excellent.
So
you have a lifetime deal at Ditka's. You're set.
I've been very lucky.
That's beautiful.
I've been extremely lucky. I don't know. I think people get drunk, and then they're like, okay, he sounds okay, or maybe they feel bad for me.
No, nobody feels bad. You also have something big coming up at the House of Blues very soon, huh?
Yes, November 6th, Sinatra Sunday, and there I'll be with a quartet, cocktail hour 5 to 6, and then the show is from 6 to 8. It'll be... November 6th. I'm like all whacked out. Yeah, wait, right?
This Sunday. Yeah.
So it's a free show. It's down at the Crossroads Restaurant. So they have dinner and drinks. You could
hang
out there. Just call the House of Blues, make a reservation. And, you know, it's just it's nice to have live musicians behind you.
Sure.
So, you know.
I want to ask you if you're comfortable in doing this. I know in addition to singing like yourself, and you've nailed that voice. Nobody sounds more like you than you, John. But you do a bunch of other performers' voices, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Can you do just a little bit? Is
sure.
that all right?
Yeah,
you're
of
okay
course,
with that?
Of course.
All right. Just give me a couple.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine.
I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I see those trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.
That's beautiful. All right, so you had Johnny Cash, of course, Satchmo, Louis Armstrong, and then old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra.
Yes, sir.
That's quite a range to be able to pull off those three voices.
Oh, thank you.
And I know you do a killer Dean Martin. Can you just do a little Dean Martin?
Everybody loves somebody sometimes. Everybody falls in love somehow.
Oh, is that good?
Something in my heart keeps saying, my somehow is now.
That is beautiful. I've always wanted to be in Las Vegas with the Rat Pack. They're not here anymore. Man. Can you just go with me and just do the voices when we drive around Las Vegas?
I performed out there a couple times at Mandalay Bay and at Paris Casino, and I love Vegas.
Crowds go nuts for you out there, I bet.
I think so. They have fun with it and all that. You know, Vegas is trouble for me because I like going out there and I like playing video poker. So okay.
That can be a dangerous couple of days. Yeah. It can be. All right, now tell me this. The other day when you're performing the national anthem, this is for game four. This is Saturday night. The world's eyes are on Wrigley Field. You're out there opening the festivities with the song. And then you realize you're not only not feeling very well, but you might pass out.
Yeah, you know, I hold the note really long. And this, I think I only held it for like 10 to 12 seconds this time. So I'm singing and, you know, everything seemed fine. I was going. And when I started holding free, I'm like, okay, Johnny, you can't hold this anymore. And if you look right after that, I stepped back and I was going to faint. I swear to God, I was on the brink of fainting. I mean, can you imagine my fat ass going down? God had to be like, okay, I'm going to help you right now, Johnny. This is it. I'm giving you one shot. I'm holding you. And man, they would probably have stopped the game, fixed the foundation at Wrigley. That would have been horrible. It would have been funny. I would have laughed. I would have been laughing at it now. And my friends would have all been ripping.
Oh, you'd never live it down.
Everybody would be ripping on me. And I would laugh at it. If I'm thinking about it now, I think it'd be funny. Can you imagine me just going down
No, you don't want to do that.
I just think it's because the antibiotics and
sure.
You know, go ahead, this bronchitis and everything. I still can't kick this. I'm trying to kick it.
It'll be gone. But also, it's the nerves of the moment because it is the World Series at Wrigley, and you realize I'm right in the middle of all this.
I always get nervous. Yeah, I was when I'm out there, I'm always nervous.
All right, how about this? You grew up on the south side of Chicago,
yes,
but
sir.
Here you are a fixture at Wrigley Field.
Yes.
Are there any conflicted thoughts about that? Or are you okay with that?
No, I grew up a Cubs fan.
Did you?
I grew up a 100% Cubs fan because my mother and father were both born in Italy, and they met here in Chicago.
Yeah.
My dad was a security guard at the Sears Tower.
Yeah.
So we never had cable back in the day. And if you remember Sports Vision and on TV.
I do.
We didn't have that.
Right.
We had two. You know, 5, 7, 9, which was GN, and a lot, you know,
and 32. A fuzzy 32.
Yes, and we watched the Cubs on Channel 9. And I remember my uncle Joe; he would take us to sometimes some Sox games and some Cubs games. He would take my sisters mostly because they were older than me.
Yeah.
But he took me to a Cubs game. I remember seeing the Ivy for the first time in 1979. You know, and 7 years old, and to see that, and to walk up those stairs, and like, wow, you know, you see it on TV, and then. When you're in there in real life, it's just a different look, a different feel, so intimate and unbelievable.
Isn't it, though? It really is. The national anthem, I've been told, is one of the hardest songs to sing, and many times you see your top performers go in there and sing it, and they'll mess up a line or two. Have you ever done that or just forgotten the words when you're about to sing it?
No, I have OCD.
You do?
Yeah, I have OCD. So what I do is I overthink everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Like, I'm like, do I have something in my nose? Am I something in my eyes? Am I something in my teeth? I'm asking the guys, they're like, you're driving me crazy, John. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm worried about it. So while I'm standing on the field, I'm just like, oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what's over and over and over and over in my head?
Yeah.
So I could keep repeating it. And,
and
I think the OCD, I mean, I really do have it. I think it helps me because, it makes me think about it so much.
Sure.
You know, that I'm like, I'll listen to another song sometimes on the way to the park.
Yeah.
I'll put like, you know, I love 80s hits and all that stuff. I'll put that on and I'll play that and I'll sing the anthem while that's playing so I could even distract myself.
Oh, that's perfect. What do you think? I know you've been close to this team for the last several weeks, especially into the playoff run and through the World Series. What do you expect to have happen? What do you think is going to happen in Cleveland?
I think they're going to win it all. I do. I really do. You got Arrieta, yeah. And then you got Hendricks. I know you got, what is it?
Corey Kluber.
Kluber. Mm-hmm. Probably for, you know, game seven. But it's the third time we're going to see him, you know. And that's what happened, you know, when we saw Kershaw again at Wrigley. You know, I sang for that game six. And to see how they came out and just started knocking it around. Kershaw's unbelievable. I mean, the guy is just unbelievable.
Yes, he is.
But so are these Cubs guys. And I'm very lucky to, you know, get to meet these guys. And they're some of the nicest guys around. And the Ricketts family, forget about it. They're just awesome.
Good.
And then Joe Maddon, I've got pretty close to Coach Maddon. And I know I call him coach, supposed to be manager, but he's just such a cool guy. He's such a nice guy. I've had dinner with him a bunch of times. Mm. I think he's perfect for this team.
Isn't he? Yeah.
And he is the best manager.
Best manager I've ever seen in baseball. Yeah, he really is.
He is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he's so cool because I remember one time it was during the year I finished the anthem. And I'm talking, you know, I'm just going to go give him a hug. And he's talking to me, and I'm like, Coach, you got to start the game. He's like, Johnny, relax. He's like, take it easy. He's like, don't worry. And I'm like, man, that is Joe cool.
He's as cool as can be.
And then Theo Epstein walks up to me and goes, you know, thank you for everything you do for us. I'm Theo Epstein. I know who you are, Theo. He's going to go down in Major League history.
Yep.
Look what he did with the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. And now what he's doing with the Cubs. This guy's he's a genius.
Yep. I agree with you.
He is a genius.
John, it was so cool to meet you. And every time you sing, you just give me shivers. You're so good at what you do. And it's a pleasure to meet you. If you want to see John perform live, he's been at Ditka since 2001. He's waiting for you. He wants you to come by so you can watch him. And then push again what's happening on Sunday.
November 6th, Sinatra Sunday, 5 o'clock cocktail hour, 6 to 8, with a quartet at the Crossroads restaurant. It's a free show. You could have dinner, drinks in there. It's a great time to hang out. It's a Sunday evening. And
why not?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, come have some fun.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much Absolutely. For having me. I love this studio.
It's beautiful. Not a bad place.
Oh,
isn't
this
it?
Is great.
Yeah, I like
it's
it.
It's great. All people walking by. And
it's fun.
Beautiful.
For people who can't see, and that's almost everybody who's just listening on the air, when we were playing the song of you doing the Star Spangled Banner, there were 35 or 40 people out front listening.
They can hear it outside. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were here.
It was quite a crowd. They loved it. They want to play now. They want a baseball game going on now.
Let's go out there.
Let's go play. All right, I'm in. A quick break, and then Rowan Ann will be by. It's Bill Leff on WGN.